to see some serious shit.
Tonight's Movie Moan is brought to you in Interruptovision.
That's if you really want me to get me argue again, like it's few things that make me truly boil. Like if you want to piss me off, like say like Amazing Spider-Man is better than Raimi movies.
Yes, see, I'm worried about that tonight because we do.
I will kill your family. Like I
that
will.
Was the best movie of 2012.
And you know,
you just heard the bottle smash against the table.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Randall, I know you hated it. Well, no, you didn't hate it actually because you were a little, you were more.
No, I'm such a fanboy that I still extrapolated some sort of like enjoyment out of it, but
no,
it was not.
That there's little things to enjoy about it. I just think like again, it's like
Josh Bale.
Yeah,
oh, you've got the chance.
Oh, Josh Bale. Let's see him. Who?
No. Oh, sorry.
Welcome aboard.
It sounds like someone's name, Josh Bale. Like, sounds like a fake name, Josh Bale.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'll see you guys next week.
All right, bud.
Take care.
All right, bud.
See you, man.
Now that he's gone, we can shit talk.
All right, I'll see you next week.
Oh, shit, he's here.
Stand by for Interruptovision Optimization Cross-Check. Configure Blip Video Podcast Screen.
Field of view could be better.
Power up high definition 1080p picture quality.
Podcasts don't need to be in high definition.
Calibrate inability to let the other person finish a sentence.
Can I finish please?
Prepare audience for maximum irritation.
Audience has turned the show off already.
The world's most annoying listening experience begins. Now.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to your Skyfall review edition of Movie Moan. I wish I'd been at Friday night's press screening, especially after reading those reviews, but I wasn't. But the countdown has begun, because we are only two shows away from the release of the film here, and my first review, and you have no idea what I've cooked up for you for that, but it's going to be a bit special and a bit different. But to starve off the frustrating wait tonight, we're going to tackle another subject very close to heart. Marvel. You may remember a few months ago that we did a special little show looking at the future of the DC comic book characters in film. And it was one of my favourites to do. It was a pleasure doing that one. And ever since, I thought it only made sense that we give Marvel the same treatment, especially since they're in a lot better shape on film right now than DC is. So tonight, we're going to be sitting down finally and covering everything Marvel related that takes our fancy. And not just on film either. We're finally going to discuss that S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show that's coming our way from Disney and Joss Whedon, as well as Phase 2 and maybe even Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're going to take a look at the future of those pesky characters that Marvel doesn't have under its roof yet, like Spider-Man and the X-Men. And finally, those characters that Marvel has gotten back but hasn't done anything with yet, like my personal favourite, Daredevil. It's going to be wicked. So, assembling tonight for this special show are first, the man who helped make that DC show so special. I mean, his speech about why Green Lantern is awesome in particular was one of the most moving and divine utterances which has ever been heard by man, period. Short of the Sermon on the Mount, the former mastermind of BlueTights.net and current owner of 6OK.com, Mr. Justin Korthoff. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello. I love coming on this show because it makes me feel good about myself when you intro me.
That's always the goal. That's all I care about. But thank you so much for joining us. It wouldn't have been the same without you, this one.
Thank you for having me.
I hope. Also joining us is a man that we haven't had on our show since we reviewed John Carter. The scars have never fully healed. Star of the Boom Patrol podcast on BrainDeadRadio.com and the, I guess, Nordberg to Captain Ed Hocken's Captain Ed Hocken. Randall, hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
I just realised I compared you to OJ. I apologise. I didn't mean
that. No, that's you'd be surprised how often that happens.
Who is Frank Drebin on that dynamic, though?
Oh, well, sir. The voice you just heard, adding some restraint to the proceedings tonight, since, let's be honest, he doesn't care all that much for Marvel's output, except when we talk about Spider-Man, then we'll get a bit of Hulk rage going.
Hey.
Think, Mr. Jamie Williams.
That's my secret, Phil. I'm always angry.
And we just want to give you a public service disclaimer tonight. Jamie is ill. But so if you do hear any odd
more than usual,
a little bit ago he basically made a coughing sound that sounded like the scene from Scanners or something. I don't know what it was, but
was it that bad?
It was really? That bad, dude. I wish I'd recorded it. It's weird.
Should have. It'd have been like Michael Ironside blowing up that bald guy's head.
I literally thought you died.
Some people are waiting for that day.
Oh, well, look, I just want everybody to know that this is the kind of guy that Jamie is, that he is not going to stop talking just because he doesn't have any lungs. He's going to keep going for us for this show, and it wouldn't be the same without him. So thank you for your sacrifice, sir.
Well, thank you.
So
I'm like Mitt Romney and Joe Biden. I just won't shut up.
That means nothing to me, mercifully. But actually, you were saying that what's going on with politics in your country right now? You're getting...
I'm just ready for it to end. We got 3 weeks till the elections, and no matter who wins, I'm just ready for it to be over.
If you think superheroes like me can fight all your battles for you, think again. Voting for your local, state, and federal representative lets you choose who's on your side in all the issues we face today. The little ones to the really big ones, too. But before you can vote, you need to register, so do it now. For registration forms or information on how to register, visit your local participating video store. Have a voice in your future. Register. And vote. And Tom Spider-Man sent you.
There's nothing worse in the country than apathy over politics.
it is an apathetic, it is very much an apathetic presidential election. This is 2000 all over again.
Oh, well.
Wait, one thing to add to that, though. Doesn't Mitt Romney, and this is not necessarily a political assessment, but doesn't he remind you of Dick Jones from RoboCop?
No, not really.
You're supposed to agree with me, man.
Sorry, man.
Absolutely.
Nice try, man. Let's move on. So let's start the ball rolling, actually, with an opening question, and it might be a tough one, but it's one that I'd like to pose to the floor. In each person's opinion, do you want to see a completely unified Marvel Universe with Marvel Studios in control of every character, with every film intertwined, with cameos galore, with Fox and Sony finally out of the picture? Or are you happy with the way things are now, and having Spider-Man or Fantastic Four show up in Avengers Land would just take the fan wankery to absurd levels? Justin, let's start with you.
I don't know that I'd go like full bore. I'd love to see them back in control of everything. I think, you know, a few films in, if you got a Spider-Man in an Avengers movie, that could be interesting, or Spider-Man and Fantastic Four crossing over. And I think that just being in control gives them a lot of cool opportunities to do things like a Hulk-Wolverine movie. But I don't know that I would want, like, this crazy, crazy crossover stuff just for the sake of crossovers. But just having that control, I mean, I've long wanted DC to have enough stability to be able to do, like, the Brave and the Bold kind of thing, where it's like, well, here's a movie with these two heroes. And I think Marvel has the opportunity to do that kind of stuff, but, you know, like you said, they gotta get everything back out of the same house. And, yeah, Phil just said in the chat there, Civil War. I think, you know, if 10 years from now they got to a point where they could do something like the Civil War plot line, that could be really amazing, but they've got to get a couple key people back under their stable. And I mean, I don't feel like I'm drastically missing anything, but it would certainly allow a lot more freedom for them. I mean, I'm kind of in the middle. Like, I'm not like, wow, everything sucks because they can't do Civil War, but it'd be cool if they could.
And I just want to point out also in the chat section that Jamie just put Secret Wars, so he's banned from any participation in this show. Randall, what do you think?
Actually, it's interesting because the way they've formulated the movie universe, there's a lot of differences from the source material. A lot of them are really good because you need people to kind of identify with individual characters rather than just have them be cutout heroes. And I know, like, Stan Lee's original versions were all, like, they had two-dimensional personalities and stuff, but you'll see that Tony Stark's character's kind of taken the role of, like, the wise-ass super genius, and so, like, he's kind of hitting the Reed Richards Spider-Man role, a combination of those. So if you had those characters show up, if they had the rights, you'd be getting some serious redundancy. And I feel like because these franchises have been separated, you're seeing them kind of I wouldn't say compensate purposefully. I don't think it's in their head going like, well, we need a guy who's like Spider-Man. It's just they're trying to give them individualistic personalities, and it's just just to reiterate, I think it's just going to be redundant to have all these characters with kind of, you know, their powers aren't necessarily like, you got a stretchy guy and all that stuff, but you got him teaming up with a guy who has like a robot suit, which is much cooler. So I feel like it's not really going to help. I feel like it's not going to help Marvel objectively as a film. Like, people aren't going to be like, well, there's, you know, Human Torch is here now, so it's going to be a better movie, if that makes sense at all.
It does, and actually I think we'll wrap it up there, because that sums it up for me. So thanks very much for joining us tonight, gentlemen. We'll join us next week. We'll have it. No, I'm just kidding, obviously. Jamie, you don't really want Secret Wars, do you, buddy?
No, it's just an example of, like, superheroes come together to fight a bigger threat. That's the first one that came to mind, actually. Deep geek knowledge there, ladies and gentlemen. Randall actually fucking hit it out of the park with that observation, actually.
I'll let you go first next time.
Well, not just redundancy. It's just the fact that if they suddenly got all the characters together, you people as an audience would probably start going, well, where the fuck were you when that stuff happened in Avengers? Seriously, yeah. You start to think about it. You'd be like, well, where was the Fantastic Four? Were they like, you know, were they just like in the toilet, like reading the newspaper or something during the whole time? Like, that's where was Spider-Man? I mean, I thought it was the funniest thing where people thought, like, I actually thought it meant something where Andrew Garfield was reading Avengers comics. And I'm like, guys, you're high if you think that Sony's going to let that happen.
It's like that bit in the Supergirl where they turn on the radio and they say, ah, Superman is actually on a different planet and completely. So just forget about him showing up. You'd have to do that every movie to sort that out. It's interesting, actually. As far as my perspective is concerned, whether it actually happens or not and whether we want it or not, I see it as inevitable. Certainly with Spider-Man.
Really?
Yeah. Certainly with Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. Not with X-Men, but we'll get to that. Spider-Man, to me, is one of those characters in film that I personally think only has so much mileage. I've never held his rogues gallery in as high regard as some.
Interesting, because I think Spider-Man has the absolute best rogues gallery. Easily, bar none, even better than Batman's, and you know that's a tall order to top Batman's villainy. I mean, there's a problem.
We're gonna have to knife about that, Jamie.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. Here's yours, a little one. Here's my big one. I don't know. I mean, there is a problem.
Perhaps I can finish my point, Mr. Williams, and then you can knife me. Okay. No, it's fine, sir. We'll get into it.
What I was going to say is the problem, though, is that Spider-Man's villains all trace down to science gone horribly wrong, and this predates Raimi. I mean, Raimi was only religiously following what the comics said, but most of his villains are that, though.
They're all high-tech animals.
Yeah, and like that's cool, but you can only do that for so long, and that's why Venom was kind of a breath of fresh air, because he was cosmic, he was otherworldly, and you could sort of fill in the blanks by yourself. But anyway.
But I think, that's one of the reasons why Venom was inevitable, because there's only so many of those bad guys which are going to make a good film villain that you can wrap a film around. And so this isn't the kind of thing where you can make a James Bond out of it, I think. You can't just crank out Spidey movies every 2 years, as wonderful as that would be for the kids in their Spidey PJs who can't get enough, and I understand why. So Sony's rebooted it. They'll run it into the ground again. It'll take 10 years. I don't see them restarting a third time. Some deal will get worked out. A fortune of money will have to be paid, but Spider-Man will be back with Marvel Studios in time for Phase 4, perhaps, as long as that thing hasn't imploded by then. And Fantastic Four, that's just the damn hardest Marvel comic book to translate. Even if it does get off the ground this time at Fox, I think in a few years' time another deal will be made, and I think the FF will be back with Marvel a lot quicker than Spider-Man will be. But actually, let's start with those properties. Let's start with the ones that Marvel and Disney don't own right now. And if you'd like, let's start with Fantastic Four. As we know, Fox has at least started on the right foot by just hiring a filmmaker, Josh Trank, and I assumed get them to create a take on it, which will either get the green light or not. Most likely not. If the hubbub we're hearing about Chronicle 2 is correct, then Trank might be just another filmmaker with bridges burned at Fox. So How well, do you do?
Chronicle 2, well, to be fair, on the Chronicle 2 thing, that's coming from Max Landis' dad, who has no who has absolutely no fight in that battle whatsoever. So that's why I didn't report it, because it was like, dude, like, what the fuck? Why are you talking about this? Like, I thought that was very strange, personally.
Well, whether it is or it isn't, I am skeptical that he'll do it. He's attached to a lot of projects, and
well, I don't think Trank is attached to direct. Actually, it's just Max Landis is attached to write it. Actually,
yeah, Landis is writing. Trank's not directing.
Max actually said like Josh probably won't be back because he's already gotten a lot of other offers.
I apologize.
I hope there's more Sky football in the sequel.
No, they'll do something different. They'll play Sky baseball.
There we go.
Well, Jamie, let's start with you this time. How do you do... Because you were the one who actually pointed this out to me first, and when I stopped to think about it, I realized how right you were. How the hell do you do the Fantastic Four on film and make it work properly?
I know exactly how you do it. I got it. You make it a retro piece. You do what the early comics were, which they were set during Camelot in the early 60s, and you actually put it in the Marvel Universe. So you can have the Marvel Universe continuity, and so when they call them the First Family, they're referring to them as the First Family of Superheroes, and have it set specifically in 1961.
I love that idea.
That's exactly what I would do. And apparently that was what if I remember correctly, Herbert Ross, the gentleman who made Down with Love, which was a 60s, an homage to the 60s rom-coms of that era, he was going to direct it. I think it's Herbert Ross. I might be getting the names. Peyton Ross.
Yes.
Excuse me.
I think so.
Yeah, it was Peyton Ross, and his version was to be set in the 60s, apparently.
Peyton Reed it was.
I'm really bad. Thank you, Peyton Reed. That's how important he is to me, ladies and gentlemen. I got his name wrong thrice. But I would make it a period piece. And then you could get away with having – that's one of the reasons why X-Men First Class kind of got away with the blue and yellow suits, because they made it into – you know, they set it in 1962 or 60. They set it in the early 60s, and they got away with some of the more outrageous stuff. And I think that's how you do it with Fantastic Four, because you can't set it in today because it's just too stupid. And I don't care what people say. They try to blame Tim Story. Tim Story was a gun for hire. He did what he did what Fox told him to do. I think a movie would have been terrible no matter who directed it. If fucking Steven Spielberg directed Fantastic Four, it would have been terrible, because it's just so fucking stupid and outrageous, even by the constraints of a comic book. It's just so out there.
Randall.
Jamie, do you hate America? What is wrong with you? You hate everything? What is the problem with the Fantastic Four, man?
I didn't say there's anything wrong with Fantastic Four. I said that the problem is that when you translate something that out there, you can get away with a lot in a comic book, but then once you start to go from page to screen, it completely changes. Things as the origins to the costumes, you have to rework everything. And unfortunately, Fantastic Four, even from the standpoint of a comic book, it's really fucking out there. And I'm not saying it's bad, it's just so bizarre when you really think about it. And to me, if you put it in the 60s, you would be gaining a lot more than you'd be losing.
I worry that would be like a band-aid, like it would be kind of gimmicky, like you'd be doing exactly what you're saying, which is kind of lampshading all the goofiness and being like, oh, it's okay because it's in the past, and then I don't know that that would really help bring make those characters more entertaining. It would just kind of let them be kind of would perpetuate the idea that they were goofy old characters. Whereas like, I think you could make them contemporary and interesting, but not like dark and not like edgy or anything, but just like,
sure,
kind of fun, kind of like how they did Iron Man.
Here's an example though. If you look at Captain America, they did the exact right thing with the first movie, and there were problems with that first film. But when they said,
"Oh, there weren't."
Anyway,
it's perfect.
but putting it in the 40s though, and having them with the Howling Commandos and all those guys, like they absolutely had the right headset.
By the way, I just want to put out something. Anytime that Jamie coughs, it means he's telling a lie. Just so you know. Just so you know what's true and not.
So I'm lying all night.
Captain America's shit, cough, lie. So there we go. Justin, I mean, I'm on board with this. What about you?
No, I think it's a great idea. I think, I mean, I'm a big opponent of them trying to modernize every single superhero that is. I loved X-Men First Class. I thought it was really brave for that movie to go back to the 60s and be like, yeah, we're going to set a story about mutant powers, you know, juxtaposed against the superpowers. And that was interesting to me. I think the idea of the Fantastic Four as sort of the Kennedys of the superhero Marvel universe is fucking brilliant, frankly. I think you can make it work. I don't think going back makes them cheesy. I think you look at something like Incredibles, which is probably the best Fantastic Four movie that's ever been made, and you can very easily make it work. You have somebody who gives a crap. Like, I'm not convinced that the people who made the films thus far, who wrote them at least, really cared. They were just writing it and filling in blanks, you know, in a way like the Green Lantern movie ended up being. But I think the idea of making them the Camelot is perfect.
I'm on board too, actually. I have to say, I mean, I'd thought of the period thing before, but the idea of that you could actually refer to them as the First Family, as kind of like an inspiration for everything, even just in passing, I think that's really cute. I do like that. I mean, the only thing that's bothered me about the modern context is that the fact that, you know, if they do it again, they're going to make the same mistakes. They're going to try and put it in a modern celebrity context, which is going to come off as awful because we hate modern celebrities and we hate modern celebrity culture. It only works as a period piece. And also, it's just a nice, quick, easy way to explain away any craziness, get away with it, and just move on. So, and I have high hopes. I mean, I have always believed that if they actually got this film made in the 90s, it could have been one of the biggest things of all time. It really, really could have been something special, and I would have gone crazy for it, even if it was shit. But today it's a bit tougher. But what about X-Men? Because I'll tell you guys, nothing to me is better than a good X-Men movie. And nothing in Marvel film has as much depth, as much to talk about, as much to delve into. When we get a good X-Men movie, I am never happier. And I'm very confident, actually, about Days of Future Past and even about The Wolverine, even though I should know better. The Wolverine is not going to do as well as X-Men Origins, irony being what it is, but people have been burned already. But Days of Future Past is going to do better than First Class. That wouldn't be that hard, but I know that sounds like...
It's going to do better than Days of Future Past because they're going to bring in all the old people who you remember from the Singer films and the Ratner film, and that's why it's going to do better, because they're going to, like, we're going to see Patrick Stewart and Famke Jason and probably Rebecca Romijn Stamos and Anna Paquin, probably even Halle Berry and a few others. That's going to be the hook for people, and obviously Jackman.
Well, if Barry's in it, I'd keep it to themselves, quite honestly, because that's not going to get people excited. I mean, it does feel like...
But Days of Future Past is the most interesting sequel of any film in development right now, because it seems obvious to me that they're trying to Star Trek the franchise. They want to wipe the slate clean continuity-wise, and they're like, well, how can we get away with it? And I am still kind of uneasy with them being so clearly trying to ape it. And granted, prove me wrong, but it seems obvious that's what they're going to do. And in terms of making it different, what do you do? And I think the obvious answer is that they're going to probably end up killing off Xavier and having Magneto be the new leader of the group. Because they are basically making, you know, because Fassbender, they want him to be the new Wolverine, the really attractive looking guy who's got an edge and is the good guy. And I just have this vision in my head, and I don't know why, is at the end of Days of Future Past, after they've changed the entire continuity, the movie will end with, they'll recreate the scene from the first X-Men movie where Wolverine is in the sweater running down the corridors trying to find out where the hell he is. But instead of having Xavier stop him and say, you're not the only one with gifts, it'll be a very kind and benevolent Eric Lyncher in the same suit he was wearing at the beginning of the first X-Men movie.
Ooh.
Saying, you're not the only one with gifts, my friend. And he smiles and the movie's over. what I mean by that is like the Age of Apocalypse, though. Because they did a thing in the comics where Xavier's son accidentally kills him and Lyncher Eric Magnus first meet. And that results in this very Mad Maxian, post-apocalyptic mutants versus mutants future. They're obviously not going to do that, but I feel very confident that they're going to do something so radical to fuck up with the timeline. And to me, it's like, well, the most radical thing you could do is kill off Charles and then have Eric say,
they already do that
in the comics.
That's what I was going to say.
They did it in X3. the third X-Men movie. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, is that too?
Yeah, what Randall said.
No. It was bad. I agree with you, but they already killed Xavier once.
Well, they didn't really kill him because then they had that cop out. No, he's really alive.
No, that was the end of Dark Knight Rises.
No, they didn't, actually.
Yeah, no, he did die because Bane came into the X-Mansion and broke his back.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
No, seriously, a joke aside, you didn't see that bit with the body of that hairy body at the post-credit scene in X-Men 3, Justin?
I was eager to get out of the theater as quick as
I could. So you didn't know?
I don't think I ever saw the post-credit
scene. No, they pretty much said at the end credits, like, Xavier's still alive.
Well, yeah, in the scene, like, he contacts Mora from, like, beyond the grave or whatever the hell.
Oh, he's like a disembodied voice.
Yeah, that's right. That's Randall's exactly correct. That's exactly what happened. But again, they're so fast and loose with the continuity by their own choice because, you know, in that movie, Mora's like 40, but then you look at X-Men First Class and she's their age, so it's like, well, shouldn't she be older? But it's like, eh.
No, the continuity doesn't make sense with First Class, but I still like First Class better than all the other X-Men movies because, I mean, that's just me.
Better.
First Class doesn't hold up as well, trust me.
The plot is not good, but the plots have never been good.
It's not the plot. It's just that you watch First Class again and you want to just see Chuck and Eric kick ass, and their scenes are electrifying, and unfortunately half the movie is people who are not Chuck or Eric, unfortunately.
No. Yeah, see, that's
I'll give you that.
I liked all the cool the team moments where they actually shot action really well instead of the clumsy wirework of the other movies. They had these like really great visceral action sequences. The CG looked really good.
You didn't the wirework in First Class was clumsy? Because I thought it looked television quality. It was bad.
It looked bad at times.
It was like Superman 4.
Well, let's not go that far, Justin.
No, come on. I could see the curtains behind him practically. It was bad.
Okay, now you're
without going too much on a tangent here, what specifically are you talking about?
The whole fight scene at the end with Banshee and Wasp flying around. Wasp in particular, I was like, kidding me? Like, she was clearly being dragged around by wires on a rig. Like,
that character was so pointless. I don't even count that as part of the movie.
Well, according to the filmmakers, the way some people read the movie, because she's a minority, she's evil.
is that not true?
That's not how it works.
That was interesting, actually. When people made that commentary, I was like, oof.
That's so stupid.
It was stupid, but like the filmmaker should have thought about that, like when they were making the movie. Like, guys, this might not come off right.
Yeah, remember it's that? Dumb and it's
But
it's
unfortunately,
dumb
to be fair, Matthew Vaughn was too busy getting January Jones pregnant. Just saying.
To direct a movie?
To know
just play the scene however you want. I'm busy.
What I feel like about this film is that if what we're guessing about it is true, and don't forget, it's still pretty much 2 years away, so
yeah, we don't know.
You don't know. I know Jim would like to think he does, but he doesn't, because he's not sleeping with Matthew Vaughn, as far as I know, anyway.
I think, but,
you know, the things he'd do for news. But what I think about this movie is either going to be the film that ends the franchise for good, or is the rebirth of it? Because, yeah, I mean, they've clearly gone down a path with X-Men First Class that they are happy to completely ignore X-Men The Last Stand and X-Men Origins Wolverine. I think The Wolverine is just its own separate entity, and I think it will be. I think they'll just treat it as this standalone thing, and hopefully we won't be bothered too much to actually try and fit it into some kind of continuity. We'll just treat it as it is. I know some people will try and tie it all together, and they're welcome to do that, but it will just be its own thing. And that's kind of why I'm looking forward to it, even though I honestly don't think the Frank Miller comics are that good. But that's just me. I think they're a bit overhyped, because really there ain't that much depth to them. It's just him fighting ninjas and having a wife and then losing the wife. It ain't that deep, but, you know, I'll go with it. But with Days of Future Past, it's going to be like they're going to continue down this road, and they're basically, by the end of it, even if they're not bringing back all the cast members, as Jamie is saying, I think we're going to end up at a point where, basically, yeah, the third film certainly never happened. In fact, maybe 1 and 2 never happened, and it's basically a way for them to continue on. And it doesn't matter if we're going to continue with the period setting at that point. We're going to get to a point at the end of this film where they can continue making just a whole new slew of X-Men movies set in the not-too-distant future. And to be honest with you, that's exciting. I don't feel, and I don't know about you guys, and this is the question I will ask you, is I don't think, I'm personally not bothered about Marvel Studios getting back the rights to X-Men right now. For one very simple reason, is that I don't like the idea of X-Men being part of the cinematic universe continuity. It doesn't fit for me. If you put them into it, then you lose the whole edge of what X-Men is about. You lose the prejudice angle. You lose the idea of them being the superior race that is all alone, and that's why they're prejudiced, because they're basically a breed of superpowered different people, but there's other breeds of different kind of species and things, so it doesn't really, you lose the power of the prejudice angle, which is what X-Men is all about and why it works on film. I don't know if I'm completely on my own about that. Justin?
I'm not a huge X-Men guy, really. I mean, I keep up with them. When I was a kid, I watched the X-Men cartoon religiously.
Yep.
But outside of that, that's the end of it. And for me, I get really, realistically, the thing that interested me most about what you just were talking about was the Wolverine. And that's a movie that I don't understand how they can keep messing it up, because that's, his story seems to me like a very easy win. Like, I don't know. It's, like, stop making bad movies. These things write themselves.
I agree. I think they should stop making bad movies. Everywhere.
I guess I was vague, but, I'm just, Wolverine, it's a guy who's basically immortal and who has bone claws and who has lived through multiple eras and loved and lost, and it's Forrest Gump over, like, a broader space of time. Oh, and by the way, he can kill people with his claws. Like,
Forrest Gump with knife hands.
Like, to me, that just seems like this is a really easy win. How do you screw this up?
Well, they did it right.
Yeah,
they already
that's
did.
That's like the best logline I've ever heard.
No, but I mean, the thing is that we've already gotten so much of Wolverine. I mean, you might as well have called the earlier X-Men movies Wolverine and the X-Men, because he's the fucking lead character in all of them.
But that's all modern Wolverine. Like, there's something to me that's really alluring about this character that was in, you know, you could do whatever you want with it in the movies. You can go from feudal Japan all the way to the modern era through modern wars.
There's this
tragic immortal story there that I think is interesting in so many ways, and has this, you know, the origin comic book, there's the one cover where he's just standing in the golden wheat fields and stuff, and I'm just like, dude, that, make that fucking thing into a movie. Like, that to
the
me
problem,
is incredibly interesting.
One of the main problems is that they never really nailed his characterization as far as, like, him, I mean, his character development, because he is the way he is in the modern films, which is fine, like, they pretty much nailed it. But in the earlier movies, we're not seeing any real development. Like, they're trying to tell us that he used to be a different person. And
yes.
All these experiences have
but he's not.
Him.
But he's not. But he's the same guy.
It doesn't work.
Yes, that's the problem, absolutely. Exactly, because, like, they actually had a really great... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Phil.
I was just going to say that the main issue seems to be, especially relating to that, he's a terrible PG-13 character. He kills, but he can't kill, really. He drinks, but he can't drink, really. He smokes, or should, but doesn't, really. He fucks and kills, but doesn't, really. We can't see what a bad person he is, because he's in a PG-13 family-friendly movie.
I was really surprised in First Class that his line was "fuck off" or whatever he said. Like,
he
dropped an F bomb, and I was like, "Wait a minute, awesome. isn't this PG-13? Like, how did that just happen?"
They've never had one before, and the way the MPAA rules go is that you can get one fuck.
Wow,
that's the way that works.
When he said that in the theater, more than the cameo itself, I was like, "Did he just say that?" Like, how did that just happen without screwing up the rating on this?
No, well, the thing about Wolverine, though, is that they had a great idea of the character, a great arc of the modern films, that he's this guy who wants to find out who he is, this lost figure who wants to know, he doesn't know anything about his past, and his whole mission in the first two movies was to find out who he was, and it was a great moment at the end of the second movie where, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but he looks at Brian Cox and he goes, whoever that guy was that you say I am, you know what? I don't need to find out, because I'm not him anymore and I choose not to know. And he goes with, and remember, he holds a little kid and he goes, you know what? I'm going to take a risk, but I choose him over you. And, like, that's the end of the arc. And that was great. You gave him nothing else to do in X-Men 3 except for whining over a bullshit quote unquote love story.
Jamie,
but, But the thing also is that once they said, okay, we're going to do the prequel movie with Wolverine, you go, okay, creatively, this could be interesting. You could make the movie where we see Logan as this absolutely irrehensible bastard who does terrible things that, as you say, Phil, the PG-13 guy doesn't do. We'll push the boundaries a little bit. We won't make it R, obviously, but we'll make him edgier in this one. And they didn't do it. He's the same fucking guy. So there's no...
He was even nicer.
He was exactly.
He was actually even
exactly.
He was horrible.
He's a lumberjack, like, and he's okay.
Exactly. And he's in love. And they had to give him an explanation.
He was the moral compass of his Black Ops team.
Exactly.
Randall, oh my God.
That's right. But Randall, you wanted to go back to Days of Future Past real quick. The floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people named Jamie and Justin who are not for this movie, and I think
it wasn't for it.
They're saying that it's the worst idea ever, and that the filmmaker should go die in a fire.
I didn't say that either. Actually,
that's Jamie. The point I'm getting at is that an important part, I think, of them adding like time travel and more sci-fi elements to this franchise is that they're actually trying to create new, interesting takes on what we've already seen a million times. Like, for instance, there's not going to be, like, we can criticize as much as we want about how gimmicky the sequel is going to be with its use of time travel, but the fact that it's adding more genre elements is actually going to create a more interesting, I don't know if I should say original, but a more unique experience for these characters that is going to be more theoretically more entertaining to watch, because they're not going to just sit there and go, okay, well, there's going to be another bad guy and he's going to attack them in the mansion and they're going to all have to go fight him on some giant ridiculous set piece that's not very convincing. And instead they're going to add, you know, like these genre elements that can help kind of create scenarios that the audience, the public is not expecting. And they can use fan service at the same time and just, like I said, create a new experience with that can kind of advance these stories more like we are familiar with as like their comic book roots, like have more fun with it and do cooler, more interesting things and bring in more wild characters and stuff. And I think it's a cool gateway to kind of go like, you know, let's just push it into more of a genre territory rather than playing it safe like we've done with three movies and it just didn't work. It collapsed on itself after the third one, you know.
It's one of those things, like, Star Trek already pulled off this trick.
Exactly.
It
was stupid when we heard about it when Star Trek did it, and yet they made it work thematically, and it just comes off as a little bit too copying the formula. In fact, this past week we heard about that was actually what they were going to do for Terminator 5 to bring back the original cast was a similar Star Trek change in the timeline. That's literally what they were going to do before it fell apart. So that's why I feel more confident.
That feels bad because it's Terminator 5 and we're sick to death
of
it.
Well, I mean, I'm going to predict it right here. The Kitty Pryde, it won't be Kitty Pryde, it's going to be Mystique, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's got to be Mystique because then they give Jennifer Lawrence something to do.
No way, because they can't. I mean, they can't even justify that because in the last movie she basically turned into a villain, so it'd be from a movie from the villain's point of view. No way.
She's not really a villain, though.
The villains in X-Men are gray. Demon. Like, they're not black and white.
They're not really villains yet, though. Even that argument.
She held hands with a guy who looked like the devil, and they all talked about killing all those innocent people. They are the villains. I'm sorry to break this.
You mean they talked about fighting back against the people that just launched a bunch of missiles at them? That makes them the victims, not the...
Yeah, that's all. Awesome.
I mean, they're bad guys, quote-unquote, but there are no... I mean, that's the whole point of... The X-Men who's the bad guy here?
Well, it was a little more clearly defined, I think, in the first movie that you see that Magneto is sympathetic, because that's what I thought was so haunting about that performance was like, look at this little kid. Like, it's ironic that his kid survived the Holocaust, this young Jewish kid, because he literally turned into a Nazi. He dressed like an SS officer. That was a stylistic choice Singer went with that was fantastic. But, you know, the other characters, they're kind of clearly bad. But Justin's absolutely correct. With First Class, they're not really villains yet. So they've still got time to have you on their side, particularly Magneto's, because he's not really evil. He's just like, I choose to go a different route.
Their whole thing is, look, we're not going to sit idly by while these people destroy us. We're going to fight back. And that, to me, doesn't make them bad guys, quote unquote. Yes, they are in the comic booky form bad guys, but they're sympathetic in a way because they've been outright attacked and told they're going to get killed. So, I mean, I don't know. I think there's plenty of room to wiggle there.
Well, the other thing is, and the great thing about Magneto that they've hooked onto, is that he is the great tempter. Like, he has a way to actually convince people to his side that that Eric doesn't without actually using his manipulator. Sorry, not Eric, Charles.
Yeah, because Eric uses facts and common sense, and he's got proof. He's like, look what just happened.
And what I love about that demon, because I've said before, is that Charles could do it. He has the power to control people. If he actually wanted to actually end this, he could bring everybody around to his side. He could remove all of Magneto's followers. Well, at least the Charles in the original movies could. He's powerful enough. This one I'm not so sure about. But, yeah, Mystique at the end of First Class, she's a teenager, don't forget. She's at a very vulnerable time when she's, you know, she's been stuck with Charles for so long. And, you know, you get to that point in a relationship where you're irritated. And now she's found a guy who's the hot new thing. I mean, who wouldn't walk away with Michael Fassbender? I would.
And not only this hot, attractive guy, but he says, I wanna sleep with the real Raven, and he makes her blue.
Oh.
I mean, that's the ultimate turn on, because
to your point, Phil, I mean, Charles and Eric are God and the devil, right? One of them can talk you into doing bad things, and the other has every ability to just make you conform, but he wants you to choose. Like, to me, that's why I love the relationship so much, is because it's these two people that are both after their own means, and I don't know, it's just all very interesting to me.
What I also just wanted to say is that to me, and I actually did pitch this, I used to do a series where I pitched movies, future movies, and future direction for franchises, and one of the things I said was that, to me, the natural conclusion of the series, if it ever ended, was one of two things. It always ended with Magneto, and it was one of two things. Either he takes control of the X-Men and becomes a benevolent leader because Charles has died, as Jamie's suggesting, or he takes a bullet for Charles. Whatever way you look at it, basically, that is the accomplishment of Charles's dream, that guy, the ultimate Nazi, as Jamie was putting it, is actually swayed to Charles's side. He actually comes around. That's the accomplishment. That's the natural conclusion of it. And I hope they agree with me, because that's what I'd love to see. But see, we're proving the point right now here that this is why X-Men's the most important. It needs to keep going. It needs to be protected. And you can make these movies endlessly, I believe.
As long as there's prejudice in the world, which is will never stop, then yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's what I like about these movies, is it's not just superheroics. They're actually about something. They're about civil rights and equality and how you deal with the different ways that you deal with those things. And I mean, that's what makes them interesting. And I think, like you said, they could just keep going indefinitely, really.
I mean, the only alternative to what Jamie said, what they seem to be doing with Days of Future Past, would be to actually create more segues into historical events. And it gets very, very awkward or preachy, or it would just be, I do not want to see Martin Luther King in the X-Men series. I'm sorry. Yeah. I just don't.
Or JFK. Yeah, I agree.
Well, he's been in it. I don't think they do him.
JFK was in.
He was in the first one.
That's right. Well, you know what? Oh, that's right. What I meant was that idea that they were talking about while they were doing press was, oh yeah, we'll have Magneto involved with the assassination. I'm like, that's stupid.
No.
And the fact that you said that's overkill.
It,
and the fact that you said it out loud suggests it won't be, because why would you have said it out loud?
Exactly. I do notice, though, that no one's answered my question from earlier, and maybe you're all just trying to let me down gently, and that's fine, but do you agree with me that there's no point actually putting X-Men in the Marvel Studios universe, because it completely undermines the point of what X-Men are about?
I agree. You're absolutely right.
Yeah,
absolutely. You're dead on.
Wicked.
You can have the two universes. You can have your Ultimates film universe, and you can have your X-Men universe on film.
Because we've just seen in this universe, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that people, I think there's a 50-50 split of what would happen in real life, but I think for the most part people would be like, oh, that's so cool, this guy has superpowers, isn't that awesome? I think that's what most people would say, to be honest.
Wait, I need to be a contrarian here and say,
yes.
If there was a scene of Xavier trying to peer into Loki's mind and them facing off with each other, because I don't know how Asgardians hold up under a psychic probe, but I'm assuming they're probably pretty powerful, especially with his way of persuading people just by talking. I think that would be pretty interesting. I think there's a lot of interesting moments that you could use with those. I think the X-Men would fit in theoretically, but
you don't have to do it. Like, they can remain separate, but I wouldn't discount the fact that they could do something great with that, with mixing those characters together. It would just have to be really unique. Like, it would have to be something like a couple years down the road that the genre was kind of ready for, if that makes sense.
Really, really, really want to see Hulk versus Wolverine.
Well, actually,
you do or don't.
That also.
I do. I absolutely do. I want to see Hulk versus Wolverine. I think is one of my like big Marvel movie things that I want to see right now.
And something about it just is interesting to me. These two basically rage monsters, like in different forms. And with Hulk's complete ability to just destroy anything and Wolverine's ability to not be destroyed, to me, I don't know what the story would be. I don't know what you would pull from for source material. I don't know any of that. I don't have those answers because I'm not a deep Marvel guy. But I do like the idea of this little Wolverine guy taking on Hulk. I think it's visually compelling and thematically interesting. And, you know, but that's the extent of it. I fanboy a little bit about it, and that's without real.
I'm gonna ultra fanboy you here and say that I don't think that Hugh Jackman's Wolverine could hold up in a fight with the movie Hulk at all. He could barely take a bullet to the head without getting knocked unconscious.
No, you're both wrong, because it's the simple dynamics of Hugh Jackman is very popular still as Wolverine. He would win by just because he's more popular.
I'm saying though that it would defy all logic and make a terrible movie.
Yeah, they break their own rules that way.
They're really concerned with breaking their own rules. I'm always angry. But, you know, anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Just because you didn't understand that scene doesn't mean it was a bad
No, I understood it. Right? I understood it was called bad writing because you had an entire hour-long set piece that all came around the fact that Bruce couldn't control his anger. And then one line says, oh, no, I can always control it. That's called bad writing. Drop mic.
What are you talking about? They allude to the fact that he can control it the entire time, but he lost it on the ship because Loki.
Well, then you can't control it the whole time. Now, can you?
That's because magic, dude. Like, you can't. Magic is a huge X factor.
Magic.
No, magic.
Yeah.
That's the name of the episode today, by the
Jamie,
way.
Jamie, you know what? You know what, man?
I'm right. I know, Randall.
I'm done with you professionally.
I'm sorry.
We'll take a short break.
It's Marvel Comics' Amazing Spider-Man like you've never seen him before in four action-packed video games. Spider-Man comes to the NES in Revenge of the Sinister Six. Dr. Octopus has assembled Electro, Mysterio, Hobgoblin, and more. Only you can disarm his evil plan to rule the world. For portable web-swinging action, it's Spider-Man 2 for Game Boy and Spider-Man for Game Gear. You'll need your Spider-Sense when you take on supervillains Venom and Carnage. Get ready as Marvel Comics Dream Team bursts onto Super Nintendo in Spider-Man and the X-Men in Arcade's Revenge. It'll take all your mutant powers, Spidey's webs, Wolverine's adamantium claws, Cyclops' optic blasts, Storm's lightning, and Gambit's exploding cards to foil Arcade's diabolical plot. Marvel Comics, Amazing Spider-Man on NES, Game Boy, Game Gear, and now Super Nintendo. If this is too much action for you, take it up with this guy.
So let's move on back to Marvel Studios and the Cinematic Universe. And we're not going to actually... Let's not do the solo characters first. I just want to cut to the chase. I want to cut to Avengers 2 before we do anything else. Just as far as what you actually think the movie's going to be, I'd be really, really interested to know. It seems self-evident what the movie's going to be, and I know that we talked about it during our review, that obviously the first movie set up, that you have the idea of hero worship and these people being accepted. The obvious antidote to that in the second movie is to tear them down again. And I imagine, being a Whedon movie, that one of the characters will die at the end, because that's just the cheap pain reliever you go for to make the dark second movie. But I think that, as lazy as it sounds, I think, yeah, you are going to have a Star Wars original trilogy out of this. You are going to have if Whedon gets his way, and that is an assumption at this point, but if Whedon gets his way, you are going to have a second movie which is smaller. which doesn't have as many set pieces, which feels more intimate, and as such won't make as much money. And then, when you come into Avengers 3 at the end of Phase 3, you will have Return of the Jedi, and you will have the biggest movie in the history of film up to that point, which will be gigantic. I think Thanos will be in this one, but I don't think they'll deal with him in this. He'll just be around, sitting on the deck of his own Star Destroyer or what have you. So that's where I see it, but what about the rest of us? Randall, we'll start with you.
I don't know. Next person. I keep hearing that they're going to go smaller with it, and what they mean is like going, I think, more deeper into the more. They're going to deal more with the characters rather than having some insane plot about the end of the world and stuff like that. And I think that makes like partial sense, You know, overall, it's hard to tell. Like, I mean, I don't want to be a cynic, but the first one was so satisfying to me as a fan that I'm kind of like, I almost kind of wish it was like a Rocky Horror Picture Show type thing. Like, just leave it alone, and then I don't need any sequels because it feels like everything will be disappointing.
I think that's a good point, Randall. I think that's, I mean, if they were smart, I think they would do that, Randall. To be honest, they would just stick with solo movies or wait, be further than 2015 to get to the sequel. Just. I mean,
yeah.
You can't.
Like, I don't. Need,
you can't.
Like,
you
say that. I don't think Randall was finished.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was adding. I was adding points to his good argument. I'm sorry.
No, I like that interruption because you're agreeing with me.
it's in a bottle.
But yeah. So like, I'm definitely looking forward to the individual movies because I feel like those are going to motivate them actually coming back together, and that's a huge part of the dynamic, at least. I know it was intentionally that way, but to me as a fan too, like, I don't necessarily want to see like, uh-oh, the world's in danger, let's go fight again. I mean, it's not that that's not entertaining. It's not that that's not entertaining, but it's like, let's make this a big deal. Let's keep this special. Let's not try to, you know, let's not oversaturate the market with this type of thing.
Well, you know what you could do for the Avengers too. This is just like spitballing it out there. Is that these guys are basically the equivalent, superhero equivalent to firefighters. And what if like you made them firefighters though? They live together in this place.
Wait
you know,
a minute, wait a minute. Are you saying they should turn into firefighters instead of superheroes?
Randall, hear him out.
Like, no,
saying,
no, go ahead.
Are you pitching Backdraft with the Hulk? No.
Exactly. No. Robert De Niro is the Hulk. No, you know what I mean, though. They're the superhero equivalent of it. I think you could go for that, though. Like, they've suddenly, you know, like it, particularly in New York City, but anywhere, you know, you look at firefighters, everyone has this great admiration for them. It's such a noble, selfless job. And they're these people who basically, they have shifts. They all, you know, some of them hang out with each other. Like, could you imagine, like, an Avengers movie where that happens? Where, like, there's one shift where it's Cap and Bruce Banner just bullshitting in the, and wherever the Avengers hang out at. Where do the Avengers hang out at, guys? I'm blanking out here.
It's going to be Stark Tower in New York, isn't it?
Yeah, the tower. Could you imagine that? I'm sitting around doing stuff like that. Like,
oh, there'll be lots more of that, dude. I mean, that's...
Yeah, but that would be a great... It's a whole movie, though. Like, you know, that's how you can make it smaller, more intimate, like just a day in the life of... They won't do that, obviously. But, like... You know, have a scene where, well, if you're a superhero like that, you know, there is no secret identity for these guys. Everyone, I'm pretty sure that people know Steve Rogers is Captain America in this universe, don't they? Or they're going to find out. So it's like he's walking down the street and, oh, go ahead, Randall.
I was going to say, adding to the redundancy factor, there are a bunch of superheroes with no secret identities who live in a giant tower in the middle of New York. If you think Fantastic Four should exist in the same universe, I think you're going to be really disappointed by
that's a good point.
How similar those two things are.
That's right. It's a good point, actually. No, but like them signing autographs and stuff all the time, like how a movie star or an actor so from television or whatever, a celebrity can't walk down the street that people like, you know, little kids crowding around him and stuff. Like, could you imagine if it was a superhero? I mean, you know Tony Stark would eat it up, but how would Steve Rogers react? How would Bruce Banner react?
He'd be always angry.
Exactly. I think the problem, though, ultimately, I mean, I don't know if it's obvious, but I think at some point they're going to do the Infinity Gauntlet, and if they're going...
Oh, yeah.
But what I'm getting at is if they're smart, they won't make it the second movie, because once you do the Infinity Gauntlet, you literally have nowhere else to go. You've destroyed the world, and the villain pulls it off.
Except he won't. That's the same reason. Like, if they do it, it's going to be like any Death of Superman movie where he's not actually going to, like, it won't end that way, right?
I mean, no, but my point being is the threat level is so big after that you can't top you cannot top that, though, after that. So if they're smart, they would let.
So what you could do is you do Infinity Gauntlet and Avengers 2. You basically destroy the world. No, you destroy the world, and then in 3, the Avengers team up with the Guardians of the Galaxy to go out into space to fight Thanos on his territory and destroy his
world. Wait a minute, Justin. Don't you mean in space?
That's a good point. That's a good idea, Justin. That's actually a very good idea.
No, it's not. It's a terrible idea. What are you talking about? That's a terrible idea I just said. Don't.
I'm just saying, Justin.
Don't encourage this.
Oh, God. Why would you agree with that? No, well, I don't know. Listen, that's then I tend to agree with you. Like, where do you go after the Infinity Gauntlet? And that's the one thing that makes me think you keep the big final Infinity Gauntlet fight with Thanos till the third movie. But then I'm left with this big gaping hole of like, well, what do you do in the second one? I have no idea. I can't wrap my head around what they mean when they say they're going to do a smaller one. Like, I don't know.
That's also kind of bullshit, Justin. I mean, like them saying that smaller, because the first movie, I mean, it's a 2.5-hour movie. It's full of character moments. It's like I hate when people say stuff like that. Like, ours movie's gonna be different because it's gonna be about the characters. Like, what? What made Avengers? I mean, I liked the movie. I didn't love it like a lot of other people did. But the best part about Avengers is that they got the characters right. All the character dynamics were perfect. Everyone had their own little moment. What are you talking about? I'm sorry, Phil.
No, I was just going to say, to answer that question, what do you do with the second movie? If I'm right, and there's no proof of this, I mean, I don't even know if the story was actually true, but it is true that Marvel, in that deal they were having, sitting down with Fox, they didn't want Fantastic Four back specifically, they wanted Silver Surfer and Galactus. I think that's what they wanted to do. If they could
awesome.
Have got it
yes.
back, the second movie, that's what they would have done. I don't know if that means that Galactus would have been Thanos' bitch, but that's probably what it would have been. You would have had another. See, that's the problem, isn't it?
That would be worth it. That would be worth for the Silver Surfer movie where he fights Thanos, though, because Thanos was the Silver Surfer's arch nemesis, after all.
They kind of destroyed the whole Galactus. They tried that once and it didn't work, and it's over now.
So wait, what you're saying is the problem with the Galactus thing, though, buddy, is that, like, they're gonna actually do the comic version where he's a fat guy with a big helmet who just eats planets like a hamburger.
He's not fat.
He's not. He's in very good shape. I don't know what you're talking about, for Seth. That is.
It clearly works out.
Fuck. He's got. I'm sure he's got a P90X on his ship somewhere.
My idea has always been Marlon Brando plays Galactus. That is the most perfect casting.
Wow.
Do you know how much vitamin D is in a planet, dude? Have you ever done the math on this? It's a substantial amount. I don't mind telling you. But I mean the issue is, though, that, I mean, this is why, actually, I wanted that to be true, because, as we always say, the big problem with that character is he is one of the hardest, you would think, to translate on screen. And with Marvel Studios, one of the things that they have always been very good about is just, whether it's ridiculous or not, whether we laugh at it or not, pretty much translating the characters as they appear on the screen as good as they can. So if they did Galactus, they would give you Galactus, a recognizable Galactus, and it would have been really interesting to see whether it actually would have worked or whether it would have been laughed off the screen.
I was just going to say, like, I'm just sitting here thinking about, like, I mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff, and, like, there's been talk that Thanos will show up there next.
Right.
And I just, how do you drag Thanos out from the credits of Avengers 1 through Guardians of the Galaxy, not pay off on Avengers 2, and then drag him out to Avengers 3, which means he'd probably show up somewhere else in between? Like, it feels like just a really long time to drag out an enemy over 4 or 5 films.
Remember, though, that nobody gives a shit about this character except for the fans, so all the fans
are going to Well, but that's what I'm saying. Like, how do you keep dropping him in? Like, you've got to start building him up to a point where people are going to give a shit. Like,
that's the thing, but you need a lot of time to do that. So they're gonna develop.
But you can't half commit it. Like, they're not gonna care if he's like in one scene. You know, like he's gonna have to commit to being a character at some point here.
You got to put yourself in the mind of the studio and the people, the public that they're writing to, which is that no one knows who this is. No one has any expectations. The majority of the audience that gave the money doesn't care and doesn't know. And everyone, there were more people scratching their heads at the end credits than there were people freaking out.
And so
I get that, but I don't think you need 4 more movies to get there. I mean, I think that's going to be confusing. If it's like if he's in like a another credit sequence or some minor role in Guardians, like I think you're going to just make more and more head scratching. Like, why the hell does this purple face guy keep showing up in like 3 minute segments? And like, who is he and what's going on? I think by the time you get to there's two, you're like, or three, you're like, what the hell? Like, I don't know. It just feels like a long build up to me.
I think Phil is right with the Vader parallel, and I think that you'll have a more rewarding experience here by dragging it out.
He shows up in the first 10 minutes of Star Wars.
Yeah, but...
And he's there throughout. Like, he's not... There were not,
no,
like,
no, no.
Four...
In the first Star Wars, he's a little boy.
Oh, I'm not...
Yeah, you son of a bitch!
Do you not watch Star Wars movies?
Not those ones.
Those are the real ones. Time will tell on that.
No, I don't. Palpatine, I think, is maybe the best example Phil put into the chat box, where you've got a hologram of him in Empire. He's not in Star Wars. He's in a hologram in Empire, and then he shows up in Return. But that's, again, he went from not there to there for 3 minutes to physically there as the villain. Like, it was a natural build-up. I don't know how...
Right.
Like, to me, the Thanos from Avengers credits is basically the hologram in that one. In that,
what you're basically trying to say is like there's someone who is more evil than the guy we just saw. That's what, as a little kid, that's what was appealing.
Yeah.
That was what was amazing to me, seeing Empire as a little kid, because you know Darth Vader's the bad guy, and all of a sudden you see like, wait, there's an even badder guy who Darth
Somebody's
Vader
bitch.
Falls. Exactly. No, seriously, that's exactly the case. And who? I mean, is that Thanos? I don't know.
I think that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, okay.
Loki was Darth Vader, and then we go, oh, wait, there's somebody else here.
And just
then,
to interject.
How many times can you pull off that stunt where you're going to go into Guardians and go, here's the villain, oh, but wait, it's Thanos again. Right. Like, how many times can you do that before you're like, okay, put Thanos in the damn movie?
Yeah, go ahead, Phil. You were going to say
A bunch of times, because it's going to be awesome. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Phil.
I was going to say, there is that one plot thread which I hope they do pick up in Thor 2. It would be embarrassing if they didn't. Remember, Loki struck a bargain with these guys, and the, whatever his name was, the lieutenant guy, said, if you fail, there will be no place where he cannot find you. He fucked up, so he's marked for death, you would assume.
The plan actually worked, that Loki's entire intent was to be let back into Asgard so he could let Thanos in to steal the Infinity Gauntlet. Like, when I heard that, I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Like, Loki didn't screw up. He just pulled a stunt big enough to convince Daddy to bring him home. And Thanos is gonna use him to get into Asgard. He's gonna basically open the bridge now for Thanos to come in and take the gauntlet, because the gauntlet's in Thor. It's in the whatever the hall thing is.
Yeah, it's in
so
the, it's
that's
in the
why bridge. The Chitauri were so shit. It makes sense now.
Well, that's a whole other thing, but what, you know, the scuttlebutt that I've heard online was that. I'm like, okay, that makes a lot of sense, and that makes, you know, I don't know, that's...
No,
I like that.
That makes sense.
I want Beta Ray Bill in one of these movies. That's all I care about.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't care if they ruined the Guardians of the Galaxy continuity if they could just work Beta Ray Bill into there.
Oh, they will, absolutely. If they're gonna do Rocket Raccoon, if they're gonna do that movie, they're basically making a statement to us, which is that we are not afraid. We will do up.
But is James Gunn the right guy to be the fearless leader in that mission?
Nope.
No? Okay.
Why?
I'm curious. Yeah, why? I'm curious.
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, but then I would say Slither.
I don't like Slither.
Okay, fair enough. But he also wrote the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Apparently you're not swaying him, James.
Apparently I'm not. I thought you liked that movie, Randall. I thought we talked about that one.
I don't see how that's a defense.
I know, I'm asking. I mean, it's a legitimate question because
writing a zombie movie is writing a zombie movie not the easiest thing there is to do?
You could say the same thing about writing a superhero movie though, or a biopic.
You would think so.
That's a thousand times harder than you have to come up. Here's the thing: if you modern superhero movies require at least a bit of characterization, internal conflict, external conflict, and a decent plot, you have to mix all this stuff together. That stuff is like a given in zombie films. It's like, what do they have to do? Survive. What's the inner conflict? Survival. It's all the same.
No, it's fair enough. That's fair enough. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just asking because I'm asking that as the guy who doesn't really know what the hell Guardians of the Galaxy is. And most people are just kind of like indifferent, like, okay, shrug. This is not a comic book movie that's going to be on many people's radars. Like, they're just going to see the trailer for this, and they're going to see this pimped in front of I guess it'll be pimped in front of, like, probably Thor 2 will be the first one that does it. So I'm just curious, like, if, I mean, are you guys aware of Guardians of the Galaxy? Because I'm not.
I wasn't until they announced it.
Right.
And I'm still not any clearer, really. In fact, actually, does anybody know? Because that would really help me out.
I'm peripherally familiar with it. I had some comics when I was a kid, but I can't remember anything about it except that it's really difficult to get a feel for it because it's all just space monsters fighting each other.
Yeah, and is that appealing? Is that going to be appealing to people? Justin, go ahead.
I think it can play. I absolutely think it can play. I mean, I don't know anything about it, and I'm really excited about the movie. I think there's... I mean, to me, it sounds like a live-action Saturday morning cartoon. Like, it sounds like it could be completely fun and awesome and adventurous, and I'm in. Like, I literally know nothing about the Guardians except what I've seen on Wikipedia since the announcement, and I'm incredibly interested in the film.
I will say, like, I really like that concept art they put at Comic-Con. That's pretty cool. It's like, okay, how's that going to be brought to life? I'll give them that.
It could be the next Mystery Man.
The downfall of Marvel, though.
That's the thing. That's a good point, though, because this is.
I don't know. They've tripped over themselves so many times.
No, but this is going to be this. Like, they have, but like the thing is, this is going to be very expensive to pull off properly. And this is the last movie that's going to be that's going to lead up to Avengers 2, and Avengers 2 is still going to be a tough sell, just because. I mean, obviously not as near. I mean, it's the third biggest movie of all time. You know what I mean when I say a tough sell? But you've now had this huge movie. Well, how do you do to top that? Like, how do you make it distinguishable and different? Go ahead, Phil.
Well, the other thing I was going to say and why I am intrigued about it is that it has one edge that not a single other comic book movie that I can think of right now has, in that I have absolutely no idea what this is going to look like. With all these other movies, you have an idea in your head of how they're going to play and how they're going to look, and so there is a bit of ho-hum about it, no matter how much you're looking forward to it. As much as I'm looking forward to Daniel Craig's next two James Bond films, I know what they're going to look like. He's going to be dressed in a smart suit with a gun. This, you just have this one overused piece of concept art, and you just think, what on earth is this thing going to look like? And either we're going to go with it or we're not, but I can't wait to find out. And I just admire... I admire the risk. And I also think that we should stop thinking about it, for better or for worse, as its own thing, because it isn't. I think very much the plan is that basically Guardians of the Galaxy and Avengers are two halves of one film. I firmly believe that. We're looking at one giant four-hour epic that's split across a few months. It's the Matrix sequels thing, which, again, is for better or for worse. But that's what I think the plan is, basically. It's going to be set up for the cosmic scale and the things that are at play and at stake in Avengers 2. And then, of course, those characters, we won't actually see them in Avengers 2, so that will be odd. But I think that's what it's going to be. Justin?
I was going to say, I actually agree with you. I think this is going to be the thing that takes us to the edge of the universe to see what the real threat is and to tell us that it's on its way to Earth for Avengers 2. But I'm looking at the picture from Comic-Con right now, and all I can think of looking at this really disparate cast of characters really is the bounty hunters from Empire Strikes Back, and how interesting that hodgepodge group of characters was.
Yeah.
What was interesting to me was it immediately then made my brain go to the Clone Wars cartoon, and I wanted to ask you guys, do you think Marvel could ever do an animated film set in one of their universes that still is in continuity with the live-action stuff?
You mean, like, could they or will they?
Could they? Like, could they make a film for the 7-year-olds that's animated to go watch, but when those 7-year-olds turn 12 and go see Avengers, it's still the same storyline continuity, but a totally different kind of medium, if you will?
If I'm going to answer this question, it means I'm segueing into something else, but if you'll allow me the risk, then I'll do it, and then we'll go back to Guardians. Because there's one character which I have not heard talked about, but he is one of the last untamed frontiers of the superhero movie, a character which I have never seen realized in live action. They've not talked about it, and yet it also seems like I don't know how the hell they could pull it off. The Submariner.
Oh, yeah.
The concept of this, and you know, of course, that is assuming that Aquaman doesn't beat him to the screen, but I think that's a pretty safe assumption. Basically,
I don't know. With everything Johns is pouring into Aquaman to try and make him relevant, I think they're going to make a play for Aquaman in theaters.
Now we're going to look up and see Timothy Oliphant as the Submariner. We all know it.
Oh my! Holy fantastic! No, anyway.
Wow. Send all checks to Jamie Williams.
For what? You're ripping us off already. Anyway, the point is, just we'll get back to Aquaman in a second if you like, but basically the concept of Submariner, as I see it in my head, is that, you know, the underwater kingdom, it's not a bubble city like in The Phantom Menace. You're talking about people that live and breathe underwater. And, you know, and they don't live in a city that keeps the water out because they're Atlanteans, right? So how in God's name do you even today pull that off in live action with actors? I just don't know. It would be amazing if you could do it, but I don't see how they could. So the idea is, yeah, do an animated movie, but make it an animated movie that you can't do in live action. I mean, years ago I said, you know, we all had hard-ons when we first heard Disney bought Marvel because we thought, does that mean Pixar could get involved? And of course we've not heard anything since, but Pixar makes, I'd rather see Pixar Submariner than Finding Nemo 2.
Pixar made their Marvel movie. It was called The Incredibles. That's yeah, the best exactly. We'll ever get. We don't need them to try to do the real McCoy when they did the fake homage one so fucking perfectly.
I agree.
And also, that was their love letter to Watchmen too, which turned out to be better than the actual Watchmen movie.
As a defender of the Watchmen movie, I have to agree with that, Randall. No, you're absolutely right when you say that.
That is another show. I am not falling into that trap. But yeah, guys, I mean, Submariner or Aquaman? I guess that's the big question, isn't it?
Submariner. Submariner, only because Marvel clearly has their shit in order.
Yeah, he'll be out before Aquaman.
Since
unfortunately.
Since Justin made this excellent point about doing prequel cartoons or interstitial cartoons that tie into the main continuity, I think an animated Submariner would be the best way to go, because that character will never play on the big screen the way anyone wants him to. They'll have to make like massive changes to the approach.
Just the design, something as simple as that. It's iconic for a comic. But
like, hey, put on pants and shoes.
Exactly.
Maybe a jacket.
He's got little wing feet, and he's got his, you know, his green underoos, and yeah, it looks silly. You can't help that.
I feel like that character would benefit from some cosmic tampering, not necessarily like overtly going like he's magic, but really explaining away some of his abilities with Asgardian shit or something, ancient Asgardian like secrets that we don't understand, because there's way to just play that as like I have little wingies.
Well, I just pulled up Submariner's Wikipedia page, and one of the headings in there is Marvel's first mutant, and I thought that was an interesting perspective if he was a mutant. Really,
that was a retcon though from like the 80s.
Was it okay? I don't know much about. I mean, I'm not a deep Marvel guy.
Well, actually,
is it considered blasphemy for the Marvel guys?
I think it is. I mean, I can only I've only heard whisperings of it from back in the day, but something that I've never heard of talked about favorably.
I think it fits the Marvel thing better though, of less magic, more science. Like,
no, what you do with Submariner is actually you take the exact approach of Thor. You make it this different society, just underwater. Like these guys have their own
armor.
Exactly what Thor did. And I tell you talk about the accomplishments of Thor. We talk about a silly movie, but they got the right guy, man. And Bran, I'm gonna say sacrilege on this, but I think Thor is probably the best of the Marvel movies ever made, personally, because I believe the reality they created. It didn't look it from the trailers, but you see the movie and you bought all the Asgard material, and then once they take
Jamie,
it, yeah, go ahead.
Your cold medication is just destroying your brain right now.
I don't even know what you're saying. I'm taking Mucinex DM, actually.
Your day coil is just, you're in, you don't know what you're talking.
That'll be a nice segue, because we'll get to Thor the Dark World in a second, but just correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but if I remember right, that seminal issue of the Avengers comic where they found Captain America in the ice, Submariner was the villain, and he tried to conquer us, the surface dwellers, didn't he? He was a villain for a while.
No. He wasn't the villain in there though. He was the guy who found Cap and then he found people worshipping him like a god, and then it was pissed off and then grabbed him and threw him into another ocean. Jason. An adjacent body of water, because he was like, don't worship them, worship me, you losers. And then that's when the Avengers, I guess, were just like near there for some reason. They were like, oh hey, look at that.
I always think of Submariner because he wants to get into Jessica Alba's pants. That's what I always think of.
You're referencing the Fantastic Four movies.
To quote McBain, that's the joke. Like, yeah, I mean, I always remember him.
But it makes everyone sad.
Sue Storm. He wanted to storm into Sue.
We'll take a short break.
I'll fight evil.
Whoa!
Are you ready to be an Avenger?
To be an Avenger, you must be strong, smart, quick, and true.
Avengers assemble!
Avengers! Old One's cannon lights up!
A is for action!
Wonder Man's ready! Ant-Man's mini-jet is set for action! Ant-Man extends! Captain America's droid explodes!
The shield will protect the Avengers!
Take that, Ultron!
The Sky Cycle soars into battle! Falcon, surprise attack!
This bird brain!
Hawkeye's quick drawing arrow will punish evil! The Avengers, united they stand, each sold separately.
Wow. Well, as long as they don't do the ultimate version where he was like this ancient magic, like mummy guy who came out of the sarcophagus.
Just, really? Magic just does not work for Marvel, I don't think. Like, when Marvel tries to do magic, it just feels weird the way that when DC tries to do, like, science fiction, it feels pandering. Like,
again, but again, Thor did it right. They say what you call magic
yeah.
science. Like,
I agree with that, but I just don't think you can go too far down that road with much of Marvel. Marvel has to, I mean, it's your world, quote-unquote. Like, it has to feel like it's just a brief extension of the world we understand, not something completely different the way, you know, Superman is or something.
They can handle the magic fine, they just have to anchor it in some sort of like sci-fi element that makes it acceptable to the audience. And they've done it before.
Maybe.
Easily do it again. It's just like, you know, how far are they willing to go with it? And it seems like since there's a raccoon holding a pistol on one of these concept art things that they're gonna
badass.
Push credibility just to the edges of the universe.
Jamie, you were asking about Thor, so let's go on to Thor 2, actually.
Yes.
Because Jamie and I are in agreement about this, actually. We've not really talked in depth, but of the Phase 2 movies, it's the one that we're both, I think I'm fair to speak for Jamie on this, looking forward to the most. We don't have much to go on right now, but what we do have is we have Hemsworth, who's awesome. We have Hiddleston, who's awesome. Always game for more Hiddleston. And we're going to have a more, hopefully, cosmic adventure. Like I said, the only thing that's giving me pause for Thor is that if you let Eccleston be bad, he will derail your film. And I'm terrified about that.
Well, we joke about G.I. Joe, but I mean, like, how many other examples has he derailed as the bad guy? Because I really don't know off the top of my head.
I'll give you some. There was The Watcher. I think it was called The Dark is Rising as well. That was the other title for it. There was Gone in 60 Seconds. There was...
We're really going to hold Gone in 60 Seconds remake against the guy?
We should hold that against everyone who was involved in that movie.
Guy, you asked for examples, Sam.
I know, but I'm just wondering, because it's like, I mean, he's... I don't know. I mean, come on, dude.
You think I'm being too cruel?
I think you clearly prefer Matt Smith as the Doctor. I think that's what this is all about. You're being biased.
Well, he is. Eccleston is capable of being very good, but he is an over actor. Like he goes way over the top.
He actually did on Doctor Who. I mean, I liked his Doctor Who, but he was
right.
Quite,
but he was just like he was devouring the scenery and like. Yeah. Him being a villain, I mean, it's kind of what they need for the Thor universe. Like, they need someone big. They need a big personality.
No, they've
but
got
at
enough.
The same time,
they've got enough.
It's a dangerous game. No, I mean, they need someone who can keep up with all the big actors that are in there. You know what I mean? Like, if Hopkins is in there, and then now what's his name is like a throw a stone and you'll hit, you know, a movie. That analogy doesn't hold up. But you know, Thor's in every single movie now.
What you're saying is like what you're saying is like every time Thor's on screen, there's gonna be Loki. Is that what you're saying?
No.
I think that's the problem though, is that we're depending a little bit too much on Christopher
Eccleston. That's a good name. Boo.
Like Bonnery when I came up. Remember that name? remember that?
That was good.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's the problem though with Tom Hiddleston is that they're depending on him too much. Because yeah, he was awesome at Thor, and I really like Thor, and he was the best part, and that's saying something because Hemsworth was so fucking good in the lead part, in the lead role. But you know, they're gonna have to have other people for Thor to fight. They can't just always go back to Loki. It's kind of like the Superman Lex Luthor thing. It's like we're gonna have to learn to not use him, and that's one of the things that's a breath of fresh air. Is that there's no fucking Lex Luthor in Man of Steel. I say that even though fucking Zod's the villain.
No, I didn't mean... No, I'm not going to go off on that tangent here. Go ahead.
No.
Carry on before I go on a Zod rant.
Gladly. We always love hearing it, Justin. We'll have you back for that show. Anyway, I didn't mean who else is there in Superman. I meant who else is there in Thor. And I don't mean that facetiously. I'm just genuinely asking what other villains are there?
Atomic Skull is another character. Sorry.
I think I've proven my point.
Wait, you're asking for more villains than Thor?
Yes. I mean, who else is there?
There's a bunch of trolls and shit.
Giants, like,
trolls.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they got to bring in Beta Ray Bill so they can up the ante here.
He's not a villain, though, is he?
He was the best villain when he showed up, though, because he was not. It's weird because he wasn't a villain. He was another hero who was battling to save his own people, and then they were put at odds with each other. And it turned out, you know, he's like, he can go toe to toe with Thor. So it was a great conflict because there was no good guys or bad guys there. And so it was it made for a really great story, which is not, you know, necessarily what people want in movies, though. So
well, we want it, and that's all that matters, Randall. But I honestly think you can hold me to this. I think they will put some kind of nod to him in this movie to suggest that the possibility he might come to it. I honestly think they will, because that's what they're all about in these movies.
They did. Yeah. End of show.
Moving on to the next movie.
Not quite. But I am honestly equally excited about Cap 2. I mean, because, I mean, to me, the reason why I was looking forward to Cap 2, the reason why I was looking forward to Captain America for so long, literally for my entire life, was because I love both aspects of his story. I love the World War II angle, but I love the idea of the fish out of water, the modern man. The man having to be one to find his place. It was the nice little. It's got potential, dude. I mean,
It does have potential, but my problem is that it's just the thing about. Oh, look, guess who else was frozen and not really dead and hasn't aged a day in 50 years?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And guess what? His really sexy. Why didn't he tap that ass every day of the week? Love interest in the first movie. She's still alive, too. Hey, look, I bet his grandma's still alive, too. It's too many coincidences, though. Hey, look, Bucky's back. You know, it's like, I mean,
look,
everyone
that
really...
was kind of like when I saw the first one, you're like, okay, he's gonna be Winter Soldier's gonna be in the next one. Like,
yeah, that was
Bucky died. I was like, well, okay.
He quote unquote died. Yeah, exactly. I swear to God, and you know they're gonna do this because you know if you notice the Red Skull wasn't really killed by the cosmic cube, he was just absorbed and sent somewhere else.
Yeah.
So watch Hugo Weaving come back up. Exactly.
That's cool. That's awesome, though. That's the whole thing. Like, they had to get away for Red Skull to come back to the modern age, and they didn't.
Oh, that's stupid, because if you want to do... Okay, here's...
No.
Okay, no,
Jamie, no, you're wrong.
No,
Randall.
Me and Randall saw Captain America together, and we held hands through it, and it was magical. It was lovely.
No. If it was just Red Skull, I'd say that's fine. But then it's like now three or four characters who are suddenly back in the modern time. It gets stupid. So if you
Winter Soldier's a bad idea for the movie to just play automatically. Yeah, you're right, because he's gonna have this whole.
So if you want to have one, hey, have surprise. One, don't have both. That's stupid. So
but
that's
no one's arguing that he should have all those at one time. We just have to pick the one we like the most because we know we have to brace for that to happen anyway.
Right.
And we all know Red Skull is the coolest character who's going to be stuck in the modern day with him.
It's true. I will agree with that side of it. But if I may make my pitch for the story and why I believe it's going to work, it's the idea that this guy who is being forced to move on and conform with the modern world and let go of... basically his entire previous life, can't, basically, because the ultimate relic from the past comes back. And I agree with you that it would be cooler if it was Red Skull, but it is his close friend Bucky, so there is, you know, there is potential there. I'm not the hugest fan of the book, personally. I think there's some odd stuff in there, and it didn't really emotionally grip me because I never liked Bucky in the comics, but I like Sebastian Stan as Bucky in the movie. I assume it's going to be the same actor. It's got potential.
Oh, totally.
That's all I'm saying.
No, he'll be replaced by Don Cheadle.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah, isn't it it's depressing that Cheadle's going to be back as Rhodey again.
Wait, he is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they can't recast it again.
I would have loved if they just were like, they just wrote off Rhodes altogether, and we're just like, sorry, we really fucked that up.
Well, they kind of did in the second movie. He's like, hey, I really like this armor, bye.
That whole arc in that movie is such a pile of shit. I don't know what the hell they were thinking. Ugh. That's
same reason Winter Soldier's, same reason Winter Soldier's in this one. It's what they think we want, so it can't wait.
They just killed everything that was great about that character was just ruined so pointlessly. Ugh. But yeah, they look awesome now in their ridiculous multicolored armor.
I think we're moving into Iron Man 3 territory then, so I'll start with you, Randall. It's an interesting question to ask, because regardless of what's happened with Avengers, as far as you are concerned, say, has Iron Man 2 burned a bridge? Could you care less about Iron Man 3?
Actually, yeah, because I thought 2 was weird, because the first movie, talking about that sci-fi magic logic thing, the Iron Man movie's really good about playing up these insane sci-fi elements that just shouldn't work on screen in such a way that made them feel believable. And it was like Favreau just did a really great job selling all that stuff. And then in the sequel, I felt like it pushed credibility beyond its own, like, limits that they'd set up. And it was just like, it just didn't make sense. And then the story itself didn't make a lot of sense to me either. So they kind of, I thought, they backtracked on a lot of ideas too, like foreshadowing the Avengers and all that stuff. So that, to me, they lost a lot of goodwill with that movie. And then Avengers was like the real Iron Man 2, yes, where we got to see him evolve. And he does evolve as a character, even if it's really, you know, you can easily discount the character development here because it's very simple, but that doesn't mean it's bad. It's very effective, and we see Stark move from selfish prick to making the big sacrifice at the end of the movie. And I thought that was really cool, and it was a welcome change to me to see the character handled with some sort of respect and also logic, like just a little bit of logic. That goes a long way.
You mean like Tony? You mean Tony stop being a selfish prick at the end of the first Iron Man?
Wait, what do you? That's not what.
Well, he's still here.
What is the point you're making? I said he was always a selfish prick, and then in Avengers they finally break that a little bit. Like he finally makes.
No,
this,
they kind of broke it. No, see, they kind of broke it in Iron Man 1.
No, you did. I'm going to tell you.
Randall, hear him out. Just let us hear out his.
No,
arc.
I'm just saying. Watch the damn movie. Like, I mean, you know, the whole point of the first movie was a guy with no heart. It's not subtle because they put it in the movie as a guy with no heart who's a selfish prick learns to become selfless and to grow a heart. And it's like, okay, how can you say like he was still he was? I don't see how you can say that. But no, Avengers, he was.
You're gonna. I'm gonna tell you. I'm gonna redirect your comment back to you and say, watch the damn movie, because at the end of the movie,
he puts Iron Man in there. Oh, that's right. It's different. Yeah, because he didn't save the world in Iron Man 1.
Well, what? To be peaceable about this, I'm gonna sort of half agree with Jamie, because he still has the ego. That's the issue that plays in Avengers.
There's no indication.
He's arrogant. I think it's a difference. People say there's a difference. Say there's a difference between someone who's confident and arrogant.
I was interrupting Phil, and now you've interrupted me.
So, Justin, interrupt me.
This is like Inception.
Hey, don't tell me what to do.
We're going deeper into limbo, like an Inception here, and we gotta get at it.
Full left down. Yes, Randall, go ahead.
So, back as young man.
The point that I'm making, and I think everyone will agree with me if they let me finish my point, Jamie, is that you're seeing the character change in the first movie, and he's understanding that there's a bigger world and there are bigger obligations, that it's not about self-serving. His redemption story is more about developing as a person and finding a new, like, how do I say, it's a personal redemption. He's not necessarily a hero. He's like, he does save people incidentally, but there's a more of a vengeance driven aspect to it. And it's self-serving still. Even when he's at his most quote unquote selfless, it's still for his own gain, his own obligations, his own guilt. He's serving himself. And then in Avengers, he finally breaks out of that and he does something that's bigger than everything. He does something that's going, it cannot really serve him because he would be dead.
Yeah, but you could prove again.
My argument is not that he doesn't change in the first movie and that's not about him becoming a better person. It's that they follow through with the arc. Just like they do with Thor in his own arc as well, and in Avengers, it's just paying off this idea that they all become heroes.
Would argue that he already is doing the selfless thing in the first movie because he's bringing down his own empire by having all of his weapons brought down. because he realizes what the...
That's atonement, though. That's atonement.
Yeah, that's so he feels better about himself. It's not...
But it's still... But it's still he's doing the right thing, though, to help other people.
You understand,
still about
you understand
that,
the motivation is what matters. I mean, I get what Randall's saying. I actually agree with Randall completely that, yes, he does change in the first film, and there is a shift to recognizing that, oh, he can't just be this fuck-off billionaire guy. But I agree with Randall that in Avengers is where that pays off, where he has nothing to gain by what he does in Avengers because he's going to be dead. But he makes that choice anyway. He's willing to just say, well, all right, well, look, I'm the one who can save everybody here, so I'm going to save people.
I think the point, yeah, like, I think you can just agree with the point that it's not, we're not necessarily saying...
It's further development.
Yeah, it's like the same idea. On the development. And it's good writing. They just go, look, this character's changed, but there's more changes to come. He's going to get he has the potential to be even better, and he also has the potential to get worse, because this is not over. He's a human being. You know what I mean? Like,
I think saying he's a human being is kind of a way to excuse them having to go through the same arc all over again. I think that's a little...
Well, but that arc is... Yeah, never mind. I'm not going to get it.
Hold on a second. Are you complaining about the fact that they're trying to write different stories? I don't understand.
No, you're saying like, oh, but if he falls off the wagon, but that's the way people are, like they go back to their old ways. Like, well, that to me, but that's not what we're doing here.
No,
we're telling stories of people who like a beginning, middle, end who change. And like, I have a feeling that when we get to Iron Man 3, he's going to be that prick again, because Tony is by heart a prick. He's just not a selfish prick anymore. He's a selfless prick. I think the thing about it personally is that we know people who are arrogant have an ego, but then there's a very fine line between being cocky and confident, and I feel like starting with Tony stopped being cocky and just became more confident. It's not – Phil's leaving.
This is getting dangerously close to us turning into a bunch of armchair psychologists, like deconstructing people and trying to understand motivations and stuff. And I think the
fiction
that we're talking
characters,
about,
yes.
Yeah, it's like, look, they did something that was believable. A character who was teetering on the boundaries of good and selfish, and it's something that everyone struggles with in reality, you know, and it's like it works, and they promised other stories involving this character's development, and it paid off, and it was nice, and I don't see what the problem is here, really.
Well, and at the end of Iron Man 1, he outs himself, and that's not a selfless... I mean, it's a pure vanity play, right? Like, it's a very selfish thing for Tony to stand up there and be like, yeah, I'm Iron Man. Because he wants the attention.
And Favreau was in control, and, like, Marvel had a lot of control, too, but he knows how to tell stories, and that's not done by accident. These things are not accidents. They did that on purpose.
I love you right now, because you said that exact same thing to Jamie like several shows back. I think about Batman, about how good storytelling doesn't happen on accident.
Yep.
My problem with Iron Man 3 is it's a very simple like aesthetic. It's that Iron Man, you know, we talked about this before, but you know, Iron Man has a bunch of shitty villains, and yeah, the Mandarin's the main villain, I guess, but he's still having a bunch of other. He's still got a bunch of bad guys who also wear armor. And when we were going into Iron Man 2, that was my problem, was I really hope they don't just – it's just not another guy in a giant piece of armor that fights other guys in armor. And that's really what it was. As much as they said it wasn't going to be with Mickey Rourke as Russian bad guy, whatever his name was, Whiplash, excuse me, who they never call him Whiplash, actually. Real Steel, exactly. Thank you, Justin. That's all it was, though, and I don't know. I mean, it seems like that's probably what it's going to be again, is another guy in armor.
Well, something that was disappointing about the second one was that they had potential with the story, because they amalgamated two of these characters, which was Crimson Dynamo and Whiplash, which was a mistake, because they could have easily taken Crimson Dynamo, who's a kind of a throwaway, but he was – the original version in the 60s was very – open to a modern interpretation where Tony actually has to befriend an enemy and take him in to try to redeem this character. And I thought it was interesting because it plays so well with the first movie about him redeeming himself and the idea that he would take someone to try to do the same and then their past would catch up with them and end up making them enemies. And basically see a mirror version of himself who goes evil. Basically almost like his version of Venom, you know, where we get to see like an alternate universe version of Tony Stark, and also that contending with the friendship themes that would come up with Rhodes and stuff, that they were able, they could have mined this for a better story, but instead just opted to just, oh, he's got cool laser whips and Mickey Rourke and, right. I don't know. They dropped the ball big time, but he has a bunch of cool villains is the point, but they're not really doing anything to make them better. Like the track record with the movies is that we'll take them and then we'll elevate them to really great film characters, not just throwaway villain of the week comic book characters. And somebody brought up, Jamie brought up Titanium Man, who's a badass character who sounds ridiculous, but is really, really cool. And there are characters too who are not armor based. They certainly have like, you know, but they're like magic and stuff.
The
too.
Melter.
Really confusing. The Melter, for instance.
Well, I'm curious, like, well, like the Mandarin. So the Mandarin isn't the, he is the villain of the movie. And this is one where it's like, it's going to come down to how he looks. And there's still a feeling of that character is heavily racist. You know, if you notice, like, Favreau, I mean, he kind of said in a roundabout way, well, we tried to do him in the first one and we kind of just realized, like, yeah, we don't really want to feel the of the, you know, ACLU or anybody else. I'm sorry, go ahead, Phil.
Well,
what else is there?
there is still a lot, I think, at this point, because we're all in such a happy mood. Let's get back to The Amazing Spider-Man.
To wrap it up.
I don't... No, I still have more, but we'll see how we're doing for time.
Yeah.
Well, I personally, I don't have anything more to say. I just wanted to sit back on this one, except for one thing, and we have talked about this, but the only thing I'm interested to see if they do in the second movie is the Green Goblin, because it will be so interesting to see the translation to film of the costume this time and the fan reaction to it, and no matter what, it will be infinitely more positive than it was to the Raimi version.
You don't know that.
I think
that's
I
that's a good point.
Usually I don't, but I am going to confidently say I think that will be the case. Once you've killed Gwen, though, which I assume that they will do in the second movie, and once you've given us five,
I don't think they have the balls to kill off Gwen, no matter what they say.
They bring in MJ.
So what? Remember, in the comics, though, like MJ was like Gwen had already dumped Peter in the comic books. So MJ was his rebound.
They're not going to draw this out, Jamie. They're not going to do a multiple film series. They're going to... They've got nothing else.
Yeah.
They're going to do it now.
If you're going to kill Gwen, you do it in part two of a trilogy.
No, sorry. You guys...
Well,
again,
what's going against you here, Jamie, is that they're casting Mary Jane in the second movie, too.
That doesn't mean anything, though. I mean...
Though.
Gentlemen, let's think about this real quick, about how stuffed this movie's already going to be. So they're going to want to continue the Peter-Gwen romance. You got that element. Then, you know, they'll probably have more of Peter's parents, what happened to them. You got that element. Now you're going to introduce Mary Jane and... Oh, and also, Flash Thompson will probably have a bigger role, so that's three things now. We might bring in Jonah and the Bugle finally. That's four things. Plus, we've now got MJ and Harry into the mix. How are they going to be used? There's that element. Then you've got the actual villains. That probably includes Electro, according to what Variety said, but he's one of the villains. So let's assume Harry's going to be in there. So that's I've now, with my fingers, now done 7 points across of what they have to get across in the Amazing Spider-Man sequel. My point is there's going to be so much stuff going on here. This is going to be a bad stuffed potato like Spider-Man 3 was. They learned nothing.
But the you saw the first one. They don't give a shit about structure or logic or anything. They're just
but also, they don't give a shit about having story and having a personality and being distinct. And
that's what
and
I'm saying. We were trying to do.
They don't take risks. They don't have some kind of like an internal ideology like the Raimi movies do. That's why I'm like, guys, I'm not so certain the Gwen thing is a done deal, because that would involve this movie and the filmmakers having balls. Because Amazing Spider-Man was so made by committee. Even the most ballsy thing they were going to do with the reboot, which was we're going to change Peter's origins for the DNA angle, which I was okay with because it still involved a goddamn spider bite. I was fine with. They even chicken shitted out of that. So I'm like, who's the fuck is to think they're going to actually have the balls to get rid of Gwen like that? For
the
all
weird
we know,
thing
Gwen-
is, how did they make that origin more nonsensical and boring than it already was? That was really confusing. Like they actually fucked it up even worse. Like I remember watching that, going like, why would you do anything that he's doing right now? What is going on?
No, the thing that fucked up the most was the Uncle Ben death, where Peter's is not responsible. That's the
everything was such a disaster in that movie. Like that nothing held up to scrutiny. Like if you question anything for a second, you just go, oh, that makes no fucking sense at all. I don't know why they did that.
I got into an argument on Twitter with a writer from another website who was telling me that Peter was not a selfish douchebag in this new version. And, you know, he thought he was very selfless in the movie, and this,
That's complete horseshit.
This dumbass who writes for a couple of websites, with all due respect, I told him he was being a moron fanboy. He must have forgotten the ending where Peter decided to blow off what the dying cop who saved the world and his ass requested him, please leave my daughter alone, but I get why you're doing this. What's Peter do? Fuck you, I'm gonna date her anyway.
Right.
That's selfless.
I don't want to cut you off because I know you want to talk real quick, but I do want to add something before we move on from that point, which is we were trying to do an article about this at work, and we were talking about – I was talking with an editor about how – like what the lot – what – does Peter become a douchebag by the end of Amazing Spider-Man? Does he throw away his morals and just still continue to be a douchebag? And the funny thing about that was I was explaining why that pitch was not going to work because he doesn't ever change. He actually is a douche from the beginning.
Right.
And he, there's no moral foundation to this character. There's no sense of like, he doesn't have guilt that follows him like he does in the original movies because he doesn't even have a conscience. He doesn't appear to be a human being. He's a catalog model who's been cut out of an American Apparel ad and is just being pranced around scene by scene with no real characterization or motivation for anything. It's to run through all the obligations of the franchise to claim that they have something going so they can keep selling bullshit toys or
You'll
whatever.
You'll love the logic though they gave Randall. Some people said was, well, teenagers are inherently selfish little bastards, so that makes it okay in this movie. Which,
but
of course,
that's a good
which
point.
It's not a good point you're telling a story though. You want to see your characters grow, so that's a lazy argument. Oh well, real people don't do that. So blah 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 blah.
A good point because it's a good starting point where you have okay, a 17-year-old. Is a 17-year-old selfish? Absolutely, they're practically fucking animals. And the thing is, like, you take that and you take the Tony Stark logic where you go, or the Tony Stark arc, where he changes, but he doesn't change enough for the better, so we have a lot of conflict left over. We know this is going to cause problems in his life, and that's something that always comes back with Peter's character. It's like, he's never in the clear. He's never able to there's no respite. He's just, everything's terrible, and he always makes mistakes. And selfishness is his big vice, and it always comes back.
Life doesn't get easier when you have to step in and like do all these things, and that was something that the comics from the early days going into the 70s with Roger Stern run in the 80s, again, they didn't seem to understand this. Peter has no repercussions for any of the stuff he does in The Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, even Uncle Ben's death, they fucked it up. They fucked it up because Peter's not responsible anymore. It's Ben's dumbass own fault for getting involved, frankly.
Jamie, you're absolutely right. I feel bad because we're derailing.
I'm sorry, Phil. I'm sorry, dude. Go ahead.
I literally have just one more, because this is the first I've heard of this, and I've literally been in stunned silence for the last 5 minutes because I don't remember anybody ever accusing Katniss Everdeen of being selfish. I don't remember anybody accusing when they got to their teenage years of Harry, Ron, and Hermione being selfish, even if they had their wonky spots. I don't know where this idea is coming from. I mean, if we're talking about a trilogy here and there's going to be a redemption arc by literally the last 10 minutes of film 3, then if that, then I guess. Well, I don't care anymore. I'm keeping it in mind of us. I've said this and I'll say it again. The kids love it. They do. They love their Spider-Man. So I'm always happy that the Spider-Man movies, because to a kid under 10 years of age, it's the greatest thing. It really is. I've seen it. I have seen it. So that's great. But I don't. I just don't know anymore about this one. It just feels played out, unfortunately.
That was a big letdown because the thing is, even though the original, I really like the original first movie. That's my favorite Spider-Man. I know that's blasphemy.
God bless. No, God bless you, sir.
No, I like. Yeah, we've talked about this.
But it's the best interpretation of the character for my money because I felt like as a film. And as a film, it's really simple, and it does everything it's supposed to do, but it doesn't sacrifice telling a coherent story. It plays everything on theme, and the characters change, and we see the parallels, and everything's used to tell the story. It's very economical. Like, it makes perfect sense. Whether or not you like it is another thing. You know what I mean? It's just a matter of taste at that point. But you can't fault it for being sloppy or anything, because it's actually really well. It's very tight, and it's well made. Going back to the original trilogy, it's not flawless if you're a fan.
if you're a fan, there are definitely things that I know I would have liked to have seen. Speaking of selfishness, I definitely would have liked to have seen things. I don't know if they would have been great, you know, in service to the story that the director had or anything. But if you have another take on it, I definitely see where they could zig, where they instead zagged, and it still would be a good story and make a good movie. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But it's confusing to see Webb and Sony's version of this, where they're saying, we're going to tell the true story, we're going to do this, which is all that slapped on gimmick bullshit. But it actually doesn't really play to any sort of version of this character I've ever seen before.
I don't blame Webb
and,
for this
and
movie.
And it makes for a weird story, because basically it's one of these things where it's like, okay, well, you've mined the source material for new elements and you found them. Then you kind of threw them away and then try to tell your own story, but it's not a story that necessarily needed to be told or even makes any sense. Like, something that's really great about the first movie is that they don't play the characters against who they are in the books spiritually. So by the end of the movie, even the plot itself, when it becomes the big third act finale set piece, it's not about saving the world from aliens or the Green Goblin's going to turn everyone into stupid goblins or some bullshit thing. They go, look, it's personal. This character is going to put innocent people in danger, and they're going to raise the stakes really high, but they're not going to betray who the characters are. Peter doesn't save the world. He saves himself, and he saves whoever is in danger immediately. That's kind of the character's scope. You know, it's not about saving the entire city or anything. And they kept true to that. And then the actual ending fight, the real finale fight, is just two guys punching the shit out of each other and having very, very strong philosophical differences about how they live their lives. And it's to me the best interpretation of the character. And I found it hacky that in the new one they resorted to the end of the world plot where he was going to turn everyone into lizard cops or whatever. It was just
lizard
awful.
Cops with like one shot, and that's it.
Lizard cops would have been an awesome spinoff.
He doesn't fight the lizard cops. I'll never get over that.
Well, I want to get to my point, though. I don't blame Mark Webb for Amazing Spider-Man, because he was a gun for hire. When these idiots keep saying, like, Webb's vision, it's like, you mean Webb's vision where the script was already written and they basically hired him to do whatever they told him to do? I mean, like,
the director, he still is accountable for many of the choices.
He's accountable, yes, but at certain point that, you know, when you're getting involved with a machine, as Phil and I do with James Bond, where it's very rare that the director really comes out in a Bond film, and it's the same way with Amazing Spider-Man. I think with the first trilogy, it was clear that they were taking such a risk that they felt, okay, well, Raimi knows the material. He's an accomplished director. He's never done a big studio blockbuster, but that's why we're taking this kind of risk, and it worked out. Raimi is all over those three movies. There's nothing about Webb in The Amazing Spider-Man, because frankly, it's a second goddamn movie. What kind of style did he develop in 500 Days of Summer? You tell me.
Yeah, but Raimi, you know. Raimi was the same thing. He was a hired studio gun. A lot of the decisions he made in the first movie weren't even decisions that he wanted to make.
Yeah, but my
he was
point
still
is,
under
he
studio
his, no, I, you're right. You're correct. But what I'm saying is, he added his. He put himself into the material. There's stuff here that are trademark Raimi visually, and even like as we talked about before with Sam Raimi's films, they're always about morality. They're always about doing the right thing, and that's all in this movie. It's clear he added that stuff.
That's what I'm saying. So the thing is, you have but
like my point being is, what did Mark Webb add to this material? He didn't add a fucking thing
but just because he doesn't add anything doesn't mean he's not responsible. It means
I'm not saying he's not completely responsible. I'm not saying he's not completely responsible, but I don't completely hold. I don't say the buck stops here with him, because he was clearly telling whatever Avi Arad and the heads of Sony said, because the movie was so goddamn paint by numbers.
Avi's
so
gone, isn't he?
No, Avi's still producing it.
I thought Avi was long gone.
No, he's still involved with this. So I don't know what Mark Webb's going to add to it. My point is that Phil and I don't know, did I say this on a record? I said this off air a couple weeks ago, but there was this online push for some people, our fellow web writers, who know this shit inside and out. They know the behind-the-scenes stuff, who were saying, save Mark Webb. And it's the most ridiculous thing, because these guys knew Mark Webb was not the fucking – it was not Mark Webb's call. The movie didn't work or fail on his – because of him. It had nothing to do with Mark Webb. So in that light, you go, well, it makes no difference if Mark Webb comes back or not. It made no difference that Mark Webb directed this movie. Absolutely.
No, it does. It does. It absolutely does, because even whether you like him or not, you're looking at if they hired McGee to do this movie, you would see an even worse lapse in quality.
I don't think
so. And it would be because
he's awful and his movies make no sense.
His movies are generally awful and he's generally, you know.
They're awful in a big way. Like,
but I don't think it would have made a difference.
Well, if we could turn away from Spider-Man, that's alright.
it's funny, we talked about Amazing Spider-Man reviewing it, we didn't really talk about the sequel as much, I don't think. But
I tried. Like, I did try.
Wait, so the sequel, they're saying that Electro is going to be the big bad in this one, which I thought was what they're alluding to in the cutscene of the last one.
Well, they didn't know who the villain was. They claimed that they didn't know. I think it was clearly supposed to be Norman Osborn, and then like they just...
There's no indication that was Osborn.
Well, because they kept talking about Osborn, that's why.
That's not anything. They talked about a lot of stupid stuff.
Well, true. Go ahead, Phil.
I'm just going to say about this, I mean, I remember a rumor right back at the inception of Spider-Man 3, and it turned out to be not true, but it was an interesting one that you laugh about it now, but basically they were going to rip off Cameron's treatments, and they were going to have Thomas Hayden Church as Sandman, and Topher Grace would be Electro, or Electro-type.
No, Chameleon.
Was that true?
People thought he was Chameleon, too.
Well, even at the time, I thought, well, you can't have Electro, because essentially... Dr. Doom in the Fantastic Four movies, he nicked Electro.
Was
Electro. So the only way you could do it now is if you completely reconceptualize the character and you basically make him a being of electricity. But then I think, wait a minute, we had Nick Nolte at the end of the Hulk as well, even if that was for just a shot. I'm sorry to bring it up, but it did happen. We did have Electro Nolte there. So it did. No, they can't do that. Like I say, the only appealing thing, and I think Jamie has agreed with me on this, is, and the one thing we haven't seen even from Marvel Studios, is if you have a whole team of villains. If you have
the Sinister Six.
Because we've never seen that before. We've never seen a bunch of villains together. That would be...
The villain that would be really great, who's thematically really in keeping with what Marvel's been doing, that would be a cool way to play this as a villain instead of a hero, is like the Scorpion. And I've seen these cool interpretations of the character where he's this like super soldier who has these like weird bionic attachments and stuff, and he's sent to hunt this character based on other people's own agendas. He's a gun for hire, but also he has his own struggle is his identity, I guess, and stuff, and I think that would be a really cool character.
Can I put out an idea here? And Randall's going to probably crucify me, Easter style, for saying this. But what about like the Clone Saga? What about a variation of that? Actually,
we'll take a short break.
Secret Wars, Doctor Doom's mission, Secret Shield. Zap Captain America with my Doom Roller.
Dr. Doom, Doom Roller, Turbo Cycle, and Captain America each sold separately. Batteries not included.
Let's roll, Doom Roller. That Ferris wheel can't stop the Turbo Cycle. Change course, Doom Roller. Now, Turbo Cycle, you're doomed.
Doom Roller and Turbo Cycle vehicles from the Marvel Superhero Secret Wars collection, each sold separately. Action figures also sold separately. New from Mattel.
But anyway, moving on, as I've tried to do, the final thing that we do need to talk about, if we're going to make this a complete discussion, and I know we have been going for a while, folks, but stick with us, is, of course, the idea, something that didn't seem possible until now, Marvel on television. Now, they have only so far talked about this S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. I don't know what that's going to entail, but I'll tell you right now, if it is just a bunch of guys in suits, I'm not particularly interested. But the potential of Marvel on TV, for me, is that you have the chance to put characters on television that, let's be honest, shouldn't be on film. Case in point, The Punisher. Punisher has had 3 times at bat. I cannot believe for a second, confident as they may be, that Marvel Studios is going to give him a 4th shot. I just don't believe it. But if you can find a way to make him work on television, I don't know if it's possible, you've got an idea there. I'm certainly willing to see it happen. Another point, you have the idea to have characters that you've already established and tell stories on television that, let's be completely honest, probably won't stretch for a whole movie. Case in point, Black Widow. They have said that they're going to do a Black Widow movie. I don't see it happening personally. And, you know, even if they do, it is obviously going to be a prequel story about what a bad lass she was before she was recruited by S.H.I.E.L.D. As a movie, I'm not particularly interested in that. I saw Salt. It was good. I don't need to see it again. But if you make that an hour worth of television, I'll watch it. I don't know if Scarlett's contract extends to television, but certainly be interesting. You basically have a way of extending the world, which I think is really, really interesting. What does everybody think? Is TV even... Is this just a ridiculous idea to limit Marvel by putting it on television because you just don't have the money, or will it work? Justin?
No, I was just going to say, I've been a long-time proponent since back in the Super Talk Concern days, six, 8 years ago, of the idea of DC actually developing a GCPD show about these cops that deal with these really kind of ridiculous things. It's not muggers, it's like legitimately insane mass murderers. And I think that S.H.I.E.L.D., while it will play out differently, I think fills a similar void. I think it can work very, very well. The news just came out at Comic-Con that that Clark Gregg is going to reprise his Agent Coulson role in this, which I find really particularly interesting, I guess. And it also says that this is not going to be S.H.I.E.L.D. at the time of the Avengers. This is going to be whatever the hell S.H.I.E.L.D. was doing before Avengers actually kind of became a thing. It's learning about superpowered people, learning about how to deal with things that are a little above the normal pay grade. Not necessarily, says Phil. I guess you're right, I guess.
I was just going to say, if you want to ask me, there is that whole Coulson Lives theory that he faked his death because they needed the push.
Well, no, actually the best theory I've heard is that they might take Vision and apply it to Coulson.
That's what I've
that's
been
not a real. That's not a real theory. That's a fan wank.
That's what I'm saying. It's a fan wank. It's actually a fan wank, but it's one of the few times a fan wank is actually not a terrible idea. And you go, they would probably.
How is that not the worst?
Well, no,
thing
they're saying
they would probably do it, dude.
Everything I'm seeing now about this, about him being on the TV show is basically like, yeah, okay, if he's doing the TV show, then they're not going to do Vision for him in the films, which I'm totally fine with. But I think the concept is very interesting. I think that they could do a lot with it, and I think it could be a little bit X-Files-y in terms of, like, here's some suited secret government agents dealing with supernatural-esque things. You look at stuff like the little shorts that Marvel's been doing, like the one that was on the Avengers DVD, I guess, of the couple that found the weapon from the Skree, whatever they're really called in Avengers. Item 47, there you go. And I think there's stories like that that can expand into a S.H.I.E.L.D. television show and keep things going. I mean, I'll watch it. I'm interested. So
I don't know if it depends on what you actually do every week with the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. Unfortunately,
you so listen, fight crime.
My thing is like, how should I put this? Like, like the pilot will have like a bunch of cameos from like Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and those guys. But making it a weekly show, I mean, people go, how should I put this? People go to the movies to see a movie. They don't want to see the TV version of a movie. It rarely works. And for all intents and purposes, that's what S.H.I.E.L.D.'s going to be. Obviously, they're committed to one season, to 13 episodes. Past that, I'm not really so certain. To me, it feels like it's the cheaper route than this goddamn Hulk show they keep talking about, which is clear. It's clear that it's never going to get made. Del Toro keeps talking about it.
Hulk doesn't work like that. Hulk is clown shoes. He's the punchline.
Right. Exactly. It's not the 70s anymore.
Hulk is not clown shoes, sir. You take that back right now.
Well, okay. He's the punchline, though, right? Hulk works when he goes, I'm always angry, and then he punches the crap out of a giant space squid. Like,
or he punches Thor. Yeah.
I mean, that's...
I wouldn't mind seeing them play around with that, him as like a character. I think they tried... And they did mostly successfully in the 2008 version where we got to see Hulk, like, instead of him standing around and smelling the flowers like in the Ang Lee version, they had him. And they used to do that. They did that in the 70s TV show, too, where he'd, like, stop and pet a deer for a second so that we knew he wasn't completely evil.
I just hope that Hulk meets Daredevil in the new show. And he's not an all-black wearing
You said he's a lawyer.
What about a Daredevil show?
Yes! 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 Whoa. 1,000 times! Amen!
I think I would watch the crap out of that.
Yeah,
they already tried the show. It was called Blind Justice, and it was really bad.
Okay.
Well, but that's, why does that, okay, that's my
That was a real show.
That was a real show. Here's
why
the
does
thing.
Stuff like that happen? Like, I'm nuts right now about this Once Upon a Time show that's basically just a really, really bad version of Fables. And you, I don't understand why people don't just, anyway, tangent, no. Go.
Yes.
So here's the thing. Daredevil would work if he did, and I know it's the go-to answer, but it's true. Daredevil is inherently a darker character. If you will, Batman without money, a poor Batman, some people have said before.
No.
Agree with it or not. Okay, just shut up. But
makes it easier to do on TV.
Exactly. No, but like you put it on HBO. and you make it.
Nobody, I don't think that audience would watch it, honestly. I think you.
I don't know, man. You've got.
I don't think you put it on the premium channel.
Game, I disagree. You've got Game of Thrones, man. That's a.
But Game of Thrones is not capes and tights, dude. I just
no,
I don't
still,
think
it's still
plays
genre stuff about a cult about people who are devoted to this niche thing that took off big.
I will make the argument, and by all means, give me a few cases where I'm wrong. If it's good drama, nobody will care what the context is. Okay.
I don't know.
I mean, I've been thinking about this for a while, and I feel so dumb that it hadn't occurred to me until recently. But yeah, I mean, Marvel now has Daredevil back. And by all means, you could give it another shot on film, but I don't see...
I guess you're right. I mean, I guess if you went really seedy with it, and it was cursing and Matt beating the living shit out of people and strip clubs and made it really seedy, poor Batman... that could work on HBO.
The problem is, though, is like motivating that character to seem like it's worth anyone's time, and it doesn't make any sense because it's inherently so silly. Like, he's a blind guy who dresses up like a devil, and even though we can enjoy that as fans who understand that comic books are kind of hokey and silly and take that for granted and just kind of go with it, which is what a lot of people do, mining that into being like an actual drama is really difficult. It's very hard to do, and I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's like you would need a very specific, engaging, creative vision to make that worth anyone's time. And I think people are discounting how hard it is to do. Like, as much as easy it is to criticize Mark Steven Johnson for his really shitty take on that material, that's his pitch still makes as much sense as it can for that movie. Do you understand what I mean? Like, I'm not
absolutely. And he got a lot of things right. I mean, people.
No, Phil, don't put words in my mouth.
No, I'm not saying that. I wouldn't dare. I wouldn't dare say. But I'm telling you that the one thing that there's a lot of things that I hook onto Daredevil. Look, I've always said, I'll say it again. I know people are sick of hearing it if you listen to this show for 5 years, but the biggest compliment I've always paid to that movie is it got me reading Daredevil comics. And when I started reading...
Me too, actually.
Yeah. Well, I think for a few people, I think it was the access drug, if you will, for lack of a better phrase. But once I started reading
it...
A bit, I mean, but once I started reading him, I realised he was my favourite Marvel character. I haven't read an issue yet that I haven't liked. Well, I've read one, actually, that season one shit that's out right now. That's terrible, because it's light and fluffy and no, never mind. Anyway, the whole point, one of the things that I latch onto about Daredevil and what I love about the character is the walking contradiction about himself. He tries, or seems to, try so hard to be a good lawyer, but he has... clearly, no faith in the justice system, because he just lives for a living, because he dresses up as Daredevil. He knows that it's most of the people that he's going to go after, if he goes after anybody, can't be touched. So he's basically just playing out a role until he can actually get into the night and kill them. And he gets hurt.
Wait. Yeah, but you're going off the movie, though. I mean, like, in the book, he's got a character who's very intently focused on upholding the law and having a moral system. And he's got this religious background and stuff. So he's the reason he does this is because there are characters who operate outside of the law, so he does it himself as well. He's like a necessity. You know,
yes.
He's like an answer to that. Just what, and so he's not a murderer. I mean, that's...
No, I didn't notice. See, now you're doing it to me, Randall. I didn't say he was a murderer.
You just said he goes out and kills them.
I meant it as a figure of speech. I didn't mean he kills everybody, obviously, but he certainly intends to seriously maim them so they can't do any more damage. But the point is that he clearly does not have 100% faith in his profession, in the law, in what he swears by on a stack of Bibles. And that's great.
That's what's cool about his whole persona, is because he's like, the fact that they made him like a devout Catholic and stuff, but he dresses up like Satan to fight crime. I mean, just a cool...
And he's a devout Catholic. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. It's so good. It's awesome. I'm squeaking now. I squeak when I get... Well, actually, to wrap up the show, there is the final golden question.
Oh, we're done? We're really done?
I think so. I mean, I think we're almost 2.5 hours, unless I've missed anybody. I mean, does anybody really have passionate feelings about the Punisher? No, I didn't think so. So
I absolutely do, but we'll save that for next.
No. I, no, go on, Randall, please. I want to hear it.
Well, nothing that I want to articulate now, except that I think that character is very underutilized.
I would actually agree with that.
Yeah,
how does he work? How do you make him work? How is it the three filmmakers have failed in the past? This is what
I agree.
I think they're missing what makes him cool, is not necessarily originality. And I don't know if that makes sense, but like a Tarantino movie, it's about taking the tropes that we like playing into them, but then turning them on their head when necessary, which is about taking a character who's vengeance driven, you know, maniac who's out, you know, murdering the shit out of people. But he's dealing with possibly like with Garth Ennis's run, not his comedic Marvel Knights run, which was very good, but his X title run where they set it in the real world, where he dealt with like human trafficking and did a bunch of stuff. I mean, at the danger of making it sound like it'd be like Law and Order SVU, that would really be like the pitch. It was like Law and Order with more shooting people in the face.
Well, but to be fair, it would be less stupid than Law and Order SVU.
Well, yeah, okay. The final question then to ask everybody here is, of all of the Marvel movies, the Marvel Universe movies and the non-Marvel, non-canon movies, which one, with a bullet, are you most looking forward to and why? Randall.
Ooh, that's a tough one. The next sequel. I mean, I'm really curious to see what they do with Iron Man. I hope they bring it back. I like Shane Black. I even though he's clearly colorblind, I think he could still make a good movie. and I think Iron Man's my next most anticipated sequel.
Justin.
Guardians is mine. I'm ridiculously excited about that. When I read the official synopsis for Guardians of the Galaxy, it feels like that's what the synopsis should have been for the Green Lantern film to me. And it makes me sad that it wasn't. But at least I'm going to get it from Marvel. I'm going to get my fix from Marvel for the things that I like, which has been happening a lot more lately, incidentally. But, yeah, I'm really excited for Guardians. It seems fun and irreverent and super heroic, and there's a fucking raccoon with a gun. Like, really? That's awesome. That's made of internet right there.
Randall loved Green Lantern. Anyway, Jamie, what...
Whoa.
How dare you?
Way to throw a grenade in that in the room there, Phil.
That's called character assassination.
And you will be sued for slander, and I will represent him.
I'll plead guilty. I don't care.
I've watched enough Law & Order to wing it.
You will be my loyal Southern lawyer.
That's right, the colorful Southern lawyer.
Is that their new spin-off, Special Internet Victims Unit?
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, yes, Jamie, what's yours?
X-Men Days of Future Past, because they've clearly got something up their sleeve in order to clean the continuity slate, and I'm curious what it is.
And giant robots. And I will say... Yeah, this is a tough one, but I'm going to agree with Jamie on that. I mean, I think there's going to be, hopefully, a confidence with this movie and hopefully a non-interference and because they've got nothing to lose as far as the continuity of the series, just the ability to go balls to the wall in this one and just make something that's going to be really, really special. And I also like the idea that they know what the movie's going to be now, not 11 months before the release date.
Right.
Hopefully we have a less rushed movie this time.
Well, I think you said it best, Phil. This is both going to be the end of the series and potentially the rebirth of the series in one movie. And, you know, this, if you notice, like, this is kind of it. The buck stops here. They say that phrase often in presidential debates and stuff like that, but it's very true. The buck stops at Days of Future Past, and what goes past that we don't know. And if you notice, they're clearly not planning anything past that, so there must be some major, major plans they've got.
And mark my words, there's no guarantee of this, but if they do show up at Comic-Con next year, they will own that show. I promise you that. All they need to do is show one piece of test footage of a giant robot, and they have owned...
Yeah. They'll recreate the shot from the cover of Wolverine, a gray-haired Hugh Jackman against...
That'll be
like
a poster.
That'll be one of the posts. They won't do the other one. They won't actually kill Wolverine and turn him into, you know, melting adamantium, because can't do that, kids. But
Yeah. Collect all
wouldn't
the happy.
Wouldn't that be an awesome way to do the first act?
Like that would be. Oh my god, it would be awesome, right?
They just kill one of the main characters and just be like, holy shit.
I think that's what they're going to do, as a matter of fact. I don't think it'll be Wolverine, yeah. But as a matter of fact, yes, Randall, I do think that's what they're
going to
do.
If we could see a scene of Magneto just going in, a young Magneto, the Fassbender Magneto in the future, like a post-apocalyptic future, just going insane on giant robots, just destroying them, like waves of giant robots. I'll give them all my money.
I've still always wanted to see, and this is because, you know, I grew up with that Pride of the X-Men cartoon, but I've still always wanted to see the bubble that he has, you know, when he's floating.
Yeah, the force bubble.
The force bubble, I still want to see that. Welcome to die!
To be fair, that is basically what Fassbender does at the end of the movie.
Yeah, do we want him wearing that outfit again?
No.
I always love the idea that there's going to be a scene where they meet each other again, and Xavier does not really have his persona. He just got paralyzed, but that doesn't necessarily make him Xavier yet. And they fast-track Magneto into having a suit when it's not really necessary. And they have to reunite, and he's just like, hey, Eric. And he's like, no, call me Magneto. And he's like, I don't want to call you that. He's like, why are you wearing a cape and this outfit? What's happening here? And he's just like, no, this is my super villain.
Actually, it would be funny if it's like really politically incorrect. And he goes, what are you, gay?
Yeah.
Like, well, I've always said.
And then he looks all timid and shy. He's like, no, man, you're gay.
Yeah.
And they just look at each other. The next scene, he's wearing his regular clothes again.
I have to wear this. I'm the leader of this renegade mutant group.
Well, I've always said that the real reason Magneto wears that helmet to block out the telepathy, because if he did take off the helmet, the first thing he'd hear would be, you look ridiculous. And he'd just be sad and stuff.
I can't hear you.
Where did you get that ridiculous outfit? You had that tailored?
He must have. It's got pockets.
Shoulder cape. But it's got a shoulder cape, the one in the new movie, I mean.
Yeah, and he's got black gloves tucked underneath his sweater, and it's like, it must be really cold outside.
Yeah, it's weird, that was one thing about those movies, like, I love McKellen and his performance and stuff, but that outfit never made sense, like, there's just no good way.
No, that outfit looks okay, it's Fassbender's, I'm just like, what?
But they all look ridiculous. Like, it's still a guy in an SS uniform with a cape on, and you're like, why are you wearing
that? Well, no, Magneto's not really wearing... Fassbender's Magneto's not really wearing the SS uniform, though.
You're getting this all mixed up, man. I said McKellen.
Oh, I thought you said Fassbender.
It's like,
old man.
It's ridiculous, and there's literally zero motivation for it. Like, he repainted his helmet, he put his little horn thing on it and stuff, and there's no reason for that. Like, I don't know why he did that. He's just showing off now.
You know, I get the feeling that one day, if there is a god, Jamie, Justin, Randall, and me, we are going to be in an old people's home. And we're still going to be having this conversation. And it's
talking
about
superheroes.
Exactly. On our hologram cubes. Watching these movies.
You broke the hologram cube, goddammit.
There's a smudge on this. I can't sell this on eBay. Which will still be around in then. Oh, happy
probably.
Days. But, folks, I just want to tell you, I can't speak for
the
audience.
Transformers? It was? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, this is called the end, Jamie, unfortunately.
you mean when you say something, I have to shut up and listen?
Well, it's never worked before, but I still
That's
keep
true.
Trying. But no, folks, I can't speak for the audience at home, obviously, but I hope they enjoyed it. But certainly, I had a fucking blast. I've been wanting to do this show for months. It worked, and it worked because of you guys. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And we will be back next week. Next week, folks, I've got a bit of a treat for you. I believe we're going to have some reviews of Argo, which I haven't seen yet, and I don't think we're getting for a few weeks, so that's going to be great. But also... Oh, is it really?
Yes.
So much for the end of the show. What's it like, Randall?
That's it. No, I just wanted to tease for your next show. I just say it's so good. I saw it yesterday.
Okay, well, we'll be back with that. And also, if you like your James Bond... we're going to have a deluge of stuff for you next week. Well, that's the plan anyway. I'm working around like the clappers to get it finished. And this 2.5-hour podcast is not going to help things. But once this is up, hopefully, there's going to be lots of stuff in the countdown to Skyfall. And, of course, the week after that, it is Skyfall time. And that show is going to be something special. So until next week, the balcony is closed. You all, you have yourselves a wonderful week.
United they stand. Each sold separately.